started a few seconds.
I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Board of Directors for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Hill.
Here.
Director White.
Here.
Chair Scholes.
Here. Would you all please stand with us for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Director, will you lead us, please? Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Let's review the order of the agenda. Do any members of the board want to change the order of the agenda?
I didn't see anything that needed changing.
Okay, very good. I'm going to make a motion
Mr. Chair, once again, I've reviewed the agenda, and I find things that I expect on there that are not, such as the audit, the administrator's evaluation, which is overdue by contract, evaluation of legal counsel, the personnel policy, which has been promised to us, the grade 3 operator job descriptions, which were long ago promised.
So, Jim, can we put an item where we'll have board member comments and you can finish that list of items?
I didn't see that either, Mr. Chair.
I understand, but I think exercising discretion of the chair, we will modify the agenda to include board member comments.
Thank you, sir. Uh-huh.
So this is basically the order of the agenda as presented by staff.
That's acceptable.
Okay. Very good. So we
make a motion. We accept the agenda.
Second.
There's a motion. There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Okay. We are going to move into public comments tonight. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the board for a period of 3 minutes. On any item within the jurisdiction of this board. I would ask everyone, I know that we had some unfortunate incidents at the last meeting, that we do this in a respectful manner, that there not be any personal attacks or any slander on anyone, and want to make sure we do this in a respectful manner. If that starts to occur, we'll recess this meeting until we get everyone to basically just comply with the being civil in public. So I'm asking for everyone's cooperation in that. So with that, let me see if anyone would like to come forward and address the board for a period of 3 minutes.
Thank you, board. Good evening. My name is Jeff Edwards. Gerhard Huebner is a white supremacist.
Jeff.
Your district administrator loathes people based upon their race.
Jeff, come on.
Mr. Chairman, this is public comment. I can say what I wish.
I just said about personal attacks and slander.
You call it what you will, Mr. Chairman. I'd appreciate if you'd start my time again, please.
Jeff.
I have the right to say what I like. There, you cannot censor free speech. That is clear in the Brown Act. That's the case. So if you want to postpone this, feel free. But I'm here, and please start my time again. Thank you. Your district administrator loathes people based upon their race, ethnicity, gender, religious beliefs, sexual orientation, and particularly people of a higher intellect. Huebner landed here after being in a supervisorial position at the County of Ventura as Deputy Director of Public Works and Water Resources for just over 10 years. Huebner was pushed out of Ventura because he is a bigot, a racist, and a bully. In May of 2011, the Ventura County Grand Jury released a report entitled Bullying in the Workplace. The investigation was the result of a public complaint. Coincidentally, during Huebner's tenure in Ventura, no less than 30 people under Huebner quit, were fired, sought reassignment, retired, or replaced on administrative leave. Does that sound familiar? The hostile workplace perpetuated by Huebner included a culture of oppression punctuated by intimidation, harassment, criticism, and demeaning remarks. Now let's examine the current situation at the district. two district employees have been placed on administrative leave by Huebner, which is part of your closed session this evening under significant exposure to litigation. In fact, your monthly warrant register includes
$28,000. I need you to comment on items that are not on this agenda.
Great. $28,000 in legal bills, mostly attributable to Huebner. The two coup de grace is Huebner's attempt to discredit Mayor Hill, who has been critical of Huebner in the past. Huebner has orchestrated a campaign to impugn the mayor's good name and credibility. What's wrong with Gerhard Huebner? Well, it appears Huebner has a personality trait known as Dunning-Kruger effect. The Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias in which low-ability individuals suffer from illusions of superiority, mistakenly assessing their abilities as much higher than they really are. Your current administrator fails to recognize his own lack of skill and fails to gauge the skill of others. This is the hubris of Huebner. In just over 1 year as the district administrator, Huebner has done incalculable damage. He has shown himself to be borderline illiterate and has focused his efforts on controlling micromanaging
your
staff
up.
Instead of leading by example. At this juncture,
Jeff,
Huebner
Jeff,
is enabled
I need you to, Jeff,
by you, Mr. Chairman,
Jeff,
and by the OCSD reps, and it's pathetic and reprehensible.
This meeting
if your
is
board
Jeff,
does not terminate Huebner with cause, it's your responsibility, and the culpability falls on you. Thank you very much.
We're going to recess this meeting for 5 minutes. I'm going to reconvene this meeting. I'm again going to ask everyone make comments on items that are not on the agenda, to do it in a respectful manner and not a slanderous manner. We want to respect the First Amendment right, but I really need you to make sure that you address your comments to the board and please refrain from personal attacks. Is there anyone else that would like to comment during public comment period?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. The question I would like to ask is, do we have an acting secretary or somebody?
Say that again, Sharon.
I'm sorry?
What was your question?
Do we have an acting secretary? And if so, I kind of think it would be nice to introduce that person, male or female. To the public, we would like to welcome whoever it is. We'd also like to know a little bit about the background or that sort of thing, and how they're being paid and, you know, that kind of thing. I'd also like to know about the status of the office renovation. I'd also like to know if the mediator is still in the loop, and if not, when was that terminated? And I agree with Mr. Hill. There are many things that we were expecting and that we're not receiving.
Thank you, Sharon. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda, but was promised to be here. At your last meeting, there was a lengthy conversation related to the audio tapes and the website and the migration or lack thereof. Mr. Huebner wrote a staff report that was very inflammatory about staff, naming names and blaming people without offering solutions to your board. Fortunately, your board asked that Mr. Huebner bring back a quote for to investigate what it would cost to forensically search the computers at the district to find the tapes and restore them to the record. What I find sort of ironic is that he gave you a timeline. It seemed to be a little interesting. It had some inconsistencies and anomalies that it appeared to have been tampered with, but I could be wrong. So I did a little timeline of my own using invoices from Jessica Mattson and the timeline that was provided and some public records requests and contracts and such surrounding the website and the work that had gone on there. I was able to get an email that Mr. Huebner received from Host Gator. This email was sent to him on December 13th, 2016. Now, if you recall, the website went up in mid-October. So almost 2 full months later, Mr. Huebner got an email from HostGator suggesting they were sorry to lose your business, but also informing him of how to back up that website before it was terminated into oblivion. Mr. Huebner didn't do that. He didn't direct anybody to do that. And as I said 2 weeks ago, and I'll say it again, the buck stops with Mr. Huebner. Mr. Huebner is the administrator of the district. And when something is done that is good or bad, he takes the credit and he takes the fall. He had the power to back up that website, and he failed to do so. Now there's a cost associated with finding those tapes. And we didn't have to incur that. And when that price does come to you, you should be asking why it's not on this agenda. But when the price of that comes to you, you should maybe consider taking it out of his salary. The ratepayers have paid enough for incompetence and mistakes.
Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Dave Miklas, and I live in Oceana, and I've been there 18 years. I had two things. First, there was a question I heard. I was here 2 meetings ago, and I've been hearing for quite a long time that Mr. Huebner has no experience working in wastewater before working in Oceana. But 2 meetings ago, someone got up and said that he has 20 years' experience, and I was wondering if I could just get that clarified. Do you have experience or not?
Sir.
Yes.
You go and comment to me, okay. Not to him. And
well, do you know that information? I don't know how to find out that information because I don't want to be spreading false
information. That information was provided or discussed at the last meeting.
Okay, I missed the last meeting, so maybe I can ask someone else. Okay. And then the other thing was there was at that meeting, someone got up and complained about the digester problem and how Mr. Clemens had not worked on that project, had just let it go. Subsequently, I was told that in 2015, he worked on that project, and there was an issue, and it was taken down because there was an emergency. He then put it in the budget for the next year, and that was taken out by Mr. Huebner, and now it's put back in emergency fund. So I just want to know what's the actual timeline, what happened there? Why is this an emergency thing? So, and what's the clarity of what actually happened?
So
I don't know how to find that out. Do you know how I would find that out?
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, thanks.
Is there anyone else?
Hi, I am Terry Clare, an Oceano ratepayer. Sometimes you win and sometimes you learn. As a district, we learned the hard way about not being actively involved during the Wallace years. But then we saw a positive change with the Knutson Report. The district was winning. There was strong leadership. Significant savings were being realized through using less expensive consultants and more staff receiving valuable training. Since John Clements came on board, the district expenses were reduced by $1.9 million the first year and continued reductions for the next 2 years. The plant was thriving, and even the board and the board meeting seemed cohesive, and we were pleased with the success. But now the bleeding has started again. Our district's money is flowing out, even possibly discussing raising even more unnecessary legal fees without even an evaluation. This is disturbing enough to your ratepayers, but what is really disastrous is what will this district pay out to future litigation lawyers handling wrongful termination cases? It is like the elephant in the room that no one is addressing or even talking to us about. It could cost hundreds and thousands of unnecessary legal fees if it goes to lengthy and expensive litigation and seriously plunging the district into a financial crisis. Our neighborhood groups are looking into a grand jury investigation like the Ventura County one on bullying. We have spoken to Mustafa Hassabi in Sacramento regarding special districts. I would like to quote a citizen from A Citizen's Guide to Special Districts in California, 3rd edition. Celebrated as the best example of democracy, special districts are California's unique concentration to local government. But what is so special about special districts anyway? The answer, focused service. Focused because most of them provide only a single service, allowing them to concentrate on one activity. You were elected by us to take care of our sand district. The majority of special districts have 5-member boards. With only 3 board members, it is probable that 2 members could be polarized on an issue and that the remaining board member would then be the sole person to affect all 38,000 of us. We would like you to agendize a discussion of adding 2 more board members, perhaps a member from the county and a roving one from one of the 3 districts. This would take the critical decision affecting 38,000 of us ratepayers out of the hands of maybe only 1 pivotal person's vote, and then at least 3 people would then handle decisions that affect all 38,000 of your ratepayers. It has been done in other districts, and it can be done here. Please, please consider what is best for all of us. You are our only voice. We will not go away or remain silent as we did during the Wallace years. Do not continue to ignore the elephant in the room. The ominous future litigation could devastate this district. Your public is begging you to not continue to walk out of closed sessions where we are counting on you and state no reportable actions. Wake up. Look at the elephant in the room.
Your time's up, Ms. Clare.
Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Mary Lucy Oceano. It has been a very heated year, I'd have to say. I wonder why the community backs certain people sometimes, and then I start digging into some of the psychological magazines that I have a tendency to read and things. And, you know, sometimes people don't change and things don't change. And so recently I was looking through some court records. And I know that Ms. Tacker and Mr. Edwards come and speak to this board quite frequently and try to provide advice and things like that. And I brought in some records that I think that the community, and I really am speaking to the community and this board, we want to believe in local government. We want to believe in boards. We want to believe that people are doing the right thing. We do really want to believe that Mr. Hill has good intentions, and I think that in his heart he does. But sometimes we all get influenced by people. And as we were growing up, you know, our parents would say, I don't want you hanging around with that kid. Well, those things were for a reason. And so what's happened is we have fallen victim to people who allegedly have committed fraud. And the court documents are available. I've brought them. I passed them out on every chair. Ms. Tacker, who is listed in these documents, went around and picked them up from the chairs. And that was information for the public. Because if you're going to be involved in local things, right, we want to be as informed as we possibly can. I see my neighbors here. I see people from my community here, good-hearted people, hard-working people. We want our money to spend wisely. And when you do these diversionary tactics and be led by people who allegedly have things pending legally against them, for things such as allegedly adult abuse, you know, fraud and
Mary,
things like
to,
that.
I need you to stop.
So I put these documents out so the community could see what was happening and where the information was coming from. Mr. Huebner is not a bad person. We asked him to come into our district to carry forward a redundancy project and to make our plant the best it possibly could be. And he's gotten nothing but grief and problems from it, and it's coming from really bad sources. And so these legal documents will show the character that's leading
that's
the
That's your
community.
Time, Mary. Thank you. Is there anyone else?
I'm Cinnamon Loft, and I live in Grover Beach. I have been coming to these meetings any number of times, and I confuse myself. I would like to ask a question that would help me with this confusion. When people come up and they ask questions about anything, it seems as though there is created this anger about the question being asked, and I'm confusing myself about, are you not supposed to ask questions? Is this an inappropriate time to ask questions that you don't know? Like that gentleman asked about whether Mr. Huebner has 20 years experience. And it's as though there's an anger that's created about the question.
So,
is this not an appropriate place to ask a question?
Yeah.
Yes, I'll let you finish.
Let me let you finish.
Okay. I just want to know what is this about, if not to find out answers to your questions.
So I will. Let me get through everyone else, and then I'll come back and ask you a question.
Okay.
Very good.
Shirley Gibson Halcyon, and I'm here representing my mother and son that own numerous properties in Arroyo, and my husband has a business in Arroyo, even though I live in Halcyon, and I'm on septic. So I wanted to speak tonight to the ratepayers out in TV land. I want the public to know that there is an ongoing, coordinated, organized assault on the general manager and on our sanitation district by a small but active group of people that attend most meetings. Manager Huebner was hired last August. From the very beginning, he was critiqued about various things. One was that his resume remained with the headhunter group that recommended him. Another was his proposal for an off-site office. Not capital offenses, but they were discussed mightily. At the same time, that same group praised and gushed about the plant manager at almost every meeting. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight people would talk about how wonderful he was. Well, they critiqued Mr. Huebner. At Mr. Huebner's fifth meeting, so that's about 2.5 months into being a brand new manager for the sanitation district. One person praised the plant manager several times and said that they wished he was still in charge. Then that person turned to Mr. Huebner and said, "Mr. Huebner, suck it up, buttercup." personally, I hope that person is not in charge of the welcome wagon for the South County. I don't think that would benefit the South County. Normally, the board of directors, staff, and the public work to make the district successful. If the active public is undermining the brand new general manager, how can the district be successful? I don't think those two things go together. At the last meeting, at least an hour of time was spent on interpreting the minutes of a prior meeting and about tapes that were not transferred to a new server. I mean, just interpreting minutes, that's minutia. I think we need to stick to the big points. In my opinion, most of the complaints have been petty, distorted, or just plain malicious. Is this group hoping that the board fires the manager? If that were to happen, then that's probably about $75,000 for severance pay, and then another $30,000 to a headhunter group. Again, a fee. So I think the only way to be successful is if everybody works at it. And I'm hoping it is time for the TV public to actually get involved instead of just watching it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is anyone else?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. As Shirley Gibson was saying, there was a group of us at one point who were against Mr. Huebner. I was one of them. I will openly admit that. I then went and got information from the other side, from others, not just one side, because no matter how flat a piece of paper is, there are two sides to the story. I have since then gotten on board with Mr. Huebner, and I've supported him ever since. I would recommend that people get both sides of the story and make an educated decision on what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I can only speak for myself. I've been coming to these meetings religiously for 5 years. I probably missed three or four of them because I was on vacation. I've seen for myself, I haven't been guided by anyone, how this district has been going over the last 5 years. For the first couple of years, it was a real struggle with Wallace at the head. At a point in time, he stepped down. We had some interim administrators who did a fine job. We brought John Clements on board, and things turned around. They turned around in a beautiful way, and the district was running magnificently. We were making money instead of losing money. There were no personnel problems. And then the board deemed it, they wanted to have a full-time administrator. Now, I didn't think that was a good idea, and I didn't have much of a say in it. So we hired a full-time administrator, and almost immediately things turned around. I personally observed. Now, I know what works, and I know what doesn't work. It worked before Mr. Huebner got here. It is not working since Mr. Huebner came on board. I've been very critical of Mr. Huebner, I think with very good reason. And I'm going to be critical of the board for not doing anything about the disaster. There's a train come down the track. It's hit us a couple of times, actually. We're just about squashed. I think it's time the board took action to rectify this mistake that they made by hiring this man. I've said it before, and I will say it again. Please terminate Gerhard Huebner's contract. That is what this district needs. I'm not going away. I'm not going away.
Is there anyone else?
I'm Dr. Arnoldson. I'm a Grover Beach ratepayer. Kind of wanted to comment on one of the people was saying something about we're a group that are mean and malicious and we're after Mr. Huebner. I think the comments that we made have been about the the job that he's doing and our lack of faith in that job. And I think when you started the meeting, you asked about the agenda. Mr. Hill had a bunch of comments about the things he expected to have done. That's where we're at. Nothing's being done. The things that are being done, we have a lot of fault with. The staff reports have errors in them. They're poorly written. And I'm not the only one that has an opinion. And several other people in the audience have had that same opinion. There's errors in the financials. He admitted to an $889, whatever it was, error last week, and didn't know where the money was. It was in the bank. No, it's not in the bank. The account was closed. These things keep happening. A good manager will not make these kind of mistakes. And as Mr. Edward alluded to, there is a grand jury report that came out. That report has a lot of coincidences between what's happening with this district and what happened to that district. I see that Mr. Hill was kind of pointed out as a bad director, and I know that the information that came from front from that was not necessarily from it came from inside the organization. That's in my opinion. So I think that what we're pointing out is what we want in a manager. We want a manager that's going to put these projects together, do them, have minutes that are correct. Like, Dr. Arnoldson was looking for a dog. Are you kidding me? I was talking about a bus that somebody was thrown under. If you're so stupid you can't read that into the minutes, we don't need minutes. I was on this board years ago. I sat with two great people that were on the Oceano Community District. They were directors, and they had a lot to say about finances. They had a lot to say about the projects, and they were right on. Rick Searcy and Dave Angelo, I think they'd be up in arms about what's happening here. I think I've said enough. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the board. And Ms. Lofton, there is not anger for questions being asked. Public communications, you can ask questions. We do not get into a back and forth. And as the chair, we determine which questions will be responded to. So you certainly can ask questions in public comment. I try to collect those questions and get answers. So that's the process. That's the procedure. Otherwise, we'll be here all night doing public communications, and there are other items on our agenda. Okay?
Can I amplify that just a bit?
Just for benefit, the board is prohibited by state law from engaging in conversation with people that come to the podium. We are required to listen to public comment, and so we're glad to hear your questions, but we can't get responding because there may be other questions, and then we get into a dialogue which is prohibited by law. So I know it's frustrating many times for members of the public that the board can't do that. So please don't take it that we're not receptive to your questions. We are, in fact, receptive, but we actually can't engage in a dialogue during public comment. We're just required to listen. At the end of the comment, as the chair has indicated, we can respond briefly to questions or make a brief comment, but this public comment's your time to speak.
Okay. So we are going to move on because there were a lot of questions that deal with personnel and HR matters that, again, we legally are not cannot respond to because we have to look at protecting not just this district but individual rights and things of that nature and. That is that's our first charge, and sometimes it does get frustrating because we do want to try to respond and answer, but under advice from legal counsel, we try to be respectful of that. Okay. So we're going to move on to our consent agenda. There are three items on consent: 5A, 5B, and 5C. Do any members of the board want to?
Chair yes. Scholes, if I may interject, I just want to bring it to your attention and to the members of the public. We do have, for the warrant register replacement page, We found when we, prior to reproduction or after reproduction, that the numbering, the warrant number numbering, there was a dupe. So we replaced that. Other than that, it's a correct document.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Huebner.
And then we would also, on the minutes for the item 6C, came to our attention just this afternoon, on page 3 under 5B, approval of the April 5th, 2017 minutes, there's a correction that we would make in terms of Leland Simpson being present or speaking. So we would just ask that that just be struck. And that's my clarification on those.
Great, thank you. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent, or do you have questions on items?
Comment, no question.
Okay. Jim, do you have the floor? So I guess legal counsel, since we, well, I guess we can vote on them. So we'll see. We can vote on them. So
that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry. Let's see where we go with this. So Jim, you have a question or a comment, right?
Yes, comment. Okay. I have a question, I guess, about the account for fluid resource management. It says number 26, and Interstate Batteries says account number 29. I don't recognize those as being district accounts. I see annual memberships paid for one of the current operators, and I believe that appeared on the January register, and I'm just wondering why an annual membership would be double billed. And then finally, I remain alarmed. First of all, the comment, CalPERS retirement, $18,000 for the period seems to me abnormally high. I know PERS issues are something that cities and districts struggle with, but this seems to me inordinately high. I would expect $7,000 or $8,000 probably to be the retirement payment to CalPERS on this billing, so I don't understand that. But my comment for numbers of times has been that I think our legal bills cumulatively, not citing any one individual, because I think hourly rates are fair, and I believe that the work, I don't have questions of the work quality or anything else, but the sheer unprecedented volume of legal bills here is exceptionally troubling to me. I've asked for this to be discussed at the board, and I see no other way around it than to vote now. On the minutes, I ask that the sense of the commenter, I know that it's difficult to capture everything that everyone says, and I don't believe that that's the intent of the minutes, but a general sense of the whether someone spoke in favor or opposed to whatever the topic was, I would like to see that in the minutes. And again, I don't see that, although we specifically asked for it on April 5th. I think the same issue remains on April 19th. So I'm not prepared to approve the minutes either.
Okay.
Could I ask a question about
yes.
the minutes? Coming from other agencies, the Roberts Rules does not require that the comments made by the public are in the minutes, and I wondered why it is being done in this agency. It is not a required thing.
Mr. Huebner, our legal counsel.
So we've had this discussion before. We try to do a balancing act in terms of reporting the substance of what the commenter is without getting into the personal attacks and negative attacks. In the case of the public comments themselves, there's really nothing supporting or opposing in terms of the actual item before it. So we try to capture the comment and the speaker to the best degree we can. You have two spectrums and minutes, and I've prepared minutes. I've reviewed hundreds of sets of minutes myself, and they come in a variety of form. And the more specificity you put in, you have run the issue of not capturing exactly what the person says. So it runs the gamut of that difficulty. And then, of course, you can go to action minutes, which a lot of entities do, and you can avoid that, in which case we, by our bylaws, are allowed to do that. So we definitely try to strike that balance and when we prepare those minutes. And so those are just the comments I'll offer.
Thank you.
Okay. And legal counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board bylaws do address preparation of minutes and maintenance of tapes. It's item number 5 on page 7 of 13, if you have them in front of you. And it's paragraph number 5.4. With regard to public comment, it says the minutes shall include brief summaries of public comment. So what this document has to say about what's put in the minutes regarding public comment doesn't really answer the question for the board or anybody.
Okay.
I would add one other comment. The amount of time and effort that you put into minutes, of course, also comes with a cost. The more specificity, the more time, the more reviewing of the tape. So, again, we try to strike that balance to be fairly representative and not throw any bias in it as well, be neutral on them. So,
and I do believe the board has asked for, instead of doing just straight action minutes, to do that summary and add additional. So, okay.
Just seems very expensive.
All right. So with that, let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone who has a comment on the consent agenda.
Julie Tacker, and we don't live by the Roberts Rules of Order here. We live by the Brown Act. And so then the Brown Act can be expanded on by the use of your bylaws. And this board directed a long time ago that you do capture the essence of the comments in the minutes. And with someone who attends a lot of meetings in a district where you've had a district administrator under investigation by the district attorney, I think the minutes should be as thorough as they can be without being transcribed necessarily. With regard to the warrant packet, I have to register my complaint with your board in the magnitude of the legal bills. The Liebert Cassidy Whitmore $16,590 is staggering. The ongoing, continuing to rise legal bills coming from Gil Trujillo and Wendy Stockton are also staggering. With regard to minutes, I think Mr. Hill caught some of the same errors in the warrant packet that I did, and I hope Mr. Huebner rectifies those. You probably shouldn't pass these warrants until the register is correct. With regard to the minutes, and something you said a little earlier, Mr. Scholes, about questions getting answered, I think today would be the sixth time that I've asked the question, and the minutes do reflect, the minutes of April 19th, about Liebert Cassidy Whitmore and when the contract was engaged in June, retroactive to May, with charges not beginning until August. Why? Why was that firm engaged when there were no personnel matters in May? Unless someone came into this district and intended to shake up the staff, or someone intended to change the staff. And I have to say, I did read the Ventura report, the grand jury report, and the bullying. The only common denominator here is Mr. Huebner is here.
Julie, I need you to comment on
that. And the minutes reflect that you have two staff members on paid administrative leave, and he's got the cover of Liebert Cassidy Whitmore at a price.
That's your time. Thank you.
And it's going to bankrupt your district.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
I think it is important that public comments are somewhat accurate as far as the sense of what someone was saying. Because down the road, that same issue might appear on the agenda. And it's good to be able to go back and say, you know, this issue came up and up and up. The public was trying to raise that issue. And all of a sudden, the board gets wind of something happening. I think this was proven out by the John Wallace whole mess and litigation and all of that. And it finally ended up being investigated, et cetera. But had it not been for the public hammering at that, that probably would not have happened. So that's my comment on that. I would like my name corrected in the April 19th minutes. My name is not Shannon Brown. It is Sharon Brown. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson. We've gone back and forth on minutes for, 3, 4, or 5 months. I think what people are asking for is accurate minutes. I don't care if they're short. I don't care if they're long. They need to be accurate. If I speak about a program that I don't like, I wanted the minutes to reflect that I said I didn't like that program. If I speak on a program that I like or a person I like, I'd like the minutes to reflect that I was in favor of that. Not that I just spoke on that issue. Those are not accurate minutes. And you guys are putting a bunch of smokescreen up there when you start talking about the cost of minutes. You've got $15,000 to $20,000 in law fees every month. These guys want another $10 an hour. Let's cut down on law fees. Let's put some money in. I mean, if you really want to worry about some fees, let's worry about the litigation fees we've got going on. It doesn't cost very much to have a secretary do some legitimate, accurate minutes.
Is anyone else? Seeing no one coming forward, let me close this and bring it back to the board. And I guess at this point, I know that basically the minutes that are on here looks like given that. Board Member White was not at either meeting of April 5th or 19th.
Sorry?
That is correct, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, and I think Board Member Hill has already specified that he cannot support the minutes, correct? And I would say then, why don't we do this? Is there, Jim, you had a couple of questions on the warrants. Mr. Huebner, I think there was one question regarding what fluid resource management and what was the other?
So fluid resource management is under contract to do the board approved a contract with them to purchase and install the mechanical bar screen project.
And is there an account associated with that?
Yeah, we have a project number.
And then, Jim, did you have another question on the warrants?
I guess the same.
It's a budgeted, we use the budgeted number, the number that we established for the project in the budget. That's how we're tracking the expenses.
And then I see Interstate Batteries, unscheduled maintenance, has an odd number as well, 29.
It's likely the account, again, ties back to either to the fund or the account, but we would expense it under that particular equipment maintenance. So that's the budget line, and we would expense it appropriately under that account for the batteries that we purchased.
I don't recall a Fund 29, but
Okay.
And the CalPERS is the correct number. I have the invoice with me in terms of the amount.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take the warrants, and I will say, I mean none of us are happy about the legal bills. And when folks make claims and we need to take the action to try and, like, as I said earlier, not only looking at the district's exposure liability, but trying to protect the rights of individuals, whether someone makes a claim or whether someone is the one that made the claim against, you know. And unfortunately, that costs money, yes. We certainly want to try and get out of the litigation business, but we have a warrant here in which we are trying to get to the facts and get to the bottom of these things, and that's as much as I'm going to say on that. So on the warrants, I don't know, see if there's someone wants to try to make a motion on these warrants with the clarifications offered by Mr. Huebner.
I'd make a motion that we approve the warrants with the amendments or clarifications as made by Manager Huebner to get the economics moving forward.
Very good. And I'm going to second that. If there's no additional discussions, do a roll call.
Director Hill?
I have no other way to bring this forward for discussion. No.
Director White?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries. So then we've got the minutes from April 5th and 19th. Legal counsel, I think rather than going through the painstaking issue of a motion trying to approve, since there are some concerns expressed by Board Member Hill and Board Member
White. Can't vote.
Yeah, so... But I was going to say, Board Member Austin is not here tonight, so...
Understood. A motion to continue would be appropriate.
Okay.
I'd move to continue the minutes.
Second.
To a future meeting.
Okay, there's a motion to continue the minutes to a future meeting. That's a date not certain. There's a second. Let's do roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes. Okay, let's move to our action items tonight. This is item 6A. This is a request, approval to purchase a replacement sight glass for primary digester number one. Mr. Huebner.
Thank you, Chair Scholes, board members, Gerhard Huebner. This is our first action item of the evening. A little bit of background. You have a staff report for you. This is a request to purchase a replacement sight glass for our primary digester number one. The current sight glass on primary digester one is cracked. This is a condition over time that has worsened or will worsen. The purpose of the equipment is to allow staff to inspect the inside condition of the digester biosolids, ensure proper mixing of biosolids. As you know, at the April meeting, we had a lengthy discussion about the primary digester cleaning project. This is an uncapping project that we are still pursuing. And when we shut down the digester, it would give us an opportunity to replace this damaged sight glass. We did solicit quotes from three different vendors. I'm not going to be able to pronounce that name correctly. I do have want to introduce our interim plant superintendent, Michael Jones. He's here to answer any questions on this particular item. He did prepare this and did solicit the quotes. We do have that quote attached to this item. That quote does meet the specifications needed for the equipment by the district. This equipment was included in the schedule in fiscal year 16-17 budget for $16,000, and this quote will meet, or for $15,639, will meet that budget line item. So with that, that's our request today to move forward to purchase this sight glass.
Very good. Thank you. Let's see if there's any questions of Mr. Huebner or Mr. Jones. Thank you for being here. So, Jim, any questions?
No questions.
Okay. No, it's pretty cut and dried.
Thank you. Okay. Very good. Let me open this up to the public, see if anybody has comments on the item before the board.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker, and it does seem that this would be cut and dried. Until you get to the financial considerations. First of all, I think the project price is a little steep. But where Mr. Huebner says, this piece of equipment was scheduled to be replaced during fiscal year 2016-17. A line item of $16,000 was included in the adopted budget for fiscal year 2016-17. As Mr. Huebner just said to you, there was considerable discussion about the digester just a meeting ago, where you had to, almost by emergency, have to clean the digester. To clean the digester, you have to empty it. To replace this glass, you have to empty it. So when Mr. Huebner gave you the report about the cleaning of the digester and the urgency behind it, he said that it wasn't budgeted for and that somehow it was overlooked. Well, how could it have been overlooked if the sight glass was included? Overlooked or removed?
Okay.
I'm merely pointing out the inconsistencies in your general manager and administrator's reports. You can't change the sight glass without emptying the digester. So now's the time to do it. But the reason it was put off, the cleaning of the digester, was because you needed that bar screen and you needed the grit removal system so that you don't fill the darn thing back up with a bunch of crud. So this was exactly the sequence in which the digester cleaning and the glass is replaced.
Is there anyone else? Let me close it. Oh, okay.
Julie made the points. Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. Julie Tacker made the points that I was also going to make, that I found it good advance planning to have the $16,000 for the sight glass replacement already in the budget. And I did wonder why this wasn't included, the cleaning project wasn't included. Also, I wondered what the timeline is.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. Next.
Yeah, Mary Lucy Asciano. Can I ask a question of the field supervisor?
So if you ask, I will ask the question. Yeah.
Okay, so the digester was delayed from its regular maintenance by 2 to 3 years because of another pipe broke. And so what is the time, on an average usually, how long does a sight glass last? If the digester had been cleaned when it was scheduled to be cleaned, would the sight glass still have to be replaced? Or is it costing us more to have to replace it later under a more critical time? Am I clear? Clip.
I think staff's captured. Yes, thank you. Is there anyone else? Let me close it, bring it back. I don't know if Mr. Huebner or Jones,
want to address one of the comments regarding the budgeting. Now, again, without getting into too much detail, when I arrived, I relied on staff to put together the schedules for what they felt was needed for replacement and maintenance and things of that sort, and I relied on their professional judgment. So the fact that this got into our schedule, I guess, is fortuitous. The primary digester, as I explained in detail, was not. I would have included it or whatever recommended it. There's no reason not to do that. And that was explained in lengthy detail at the last meeting. So just to make those clarifications in terms of trying to create an inconsistency that doesn't exist.
Okay.
In terms of the sight glass lifespan, I'll look to Mr. Jones if he has any insight. I don't know the lifespan of one. Perhaps he has a little bit of experience.
I think
the question, again for clarification, is what's the typical lifespan of a site class, if you know?
I know that the current site glass on the digester number one is a different, made by a different manufacturer. I know that we had a few years back, before my time, when they cleaned the digester number two, they replaced that site glass with the current maker. And it's lasted, I think that cleaning was, 2005. And it's still properly functioning today. So that's as far as my knowledge.
No, very good. And then there was I don't want to get into this, wherever there was inconsistency, but I think Ms. Brown asked a question. So going forward with respect to the item before this board tonight, if this is approved, what's the time frame for installation?
As far as getting the piece of equipment and then installing?
That is correct.
Well, we'd have to install this, we'd have to shut down the digester and then install the equipment. We have planned the shutdown and cleaning of our digester. As soon as that happens, of course, we would install the sight glass.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Okay. So the item before us is purchasing a replacement sight glass for primary digester number one.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we approve purchase of a replacement dual-view flange sight glass for the district's primary digester number one from Papilius Incorporated in the amount of $15,639.
Second.
Okay, there is a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Dr. White?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes, the motion carries. We're going to move on to item 6B. This is new district record retention schedule. Mr. Huebner.
Thank you, Chair Scholes, members of the directors, members of the audience. This is item 6B. I have a short PowerPoint presentation for you. It follows the staff report that you have before you. So let's just get started. As you know, the district retains a number of documents and records at the facility, both in electronic and written form. They're housed at a variety of places at our facility, including the administration control building, our C-train and the administrative trailer, computers, servers, and the website. A couple categories of examples of the records include our board administration, of course, ordinance, resolutions, minutes. We have customer service documents, development, engineering, finance, human resources, maintenance and operation, risk management, and so forth. Currently, our existing record retention schedule, and we've included that as attachment one, is contained in our operations and maintenance manual, is wholly out of date, in my opinion, and others that have reviewed it. It's not comprehensive or inclusive of our universe of documents. In addition, the district maintains a large number of records, drawings, data, and boxes contained in the C-train. And to a certain degree, they're not very well indexed or cataloged. I mean, some are, some aren't, but it's a little bit of a mishmash. Therefore, as part of this year's district records management initiative, and you've heard me describe it briefly in our district administrative report, we've embarked on developing a new records retention schedule. So how did we go about and do it? Well, first step is I researched and compiled and looked at other agencies' record retention policies and schedules, including a few that I'm familiar with. We then evaluated and compared them to the district's existing record retention schedule to kind of do a compare and contrast. We did find we're very fortunate that the Oceana Community Service District recently adopted a record retention schedule that's comprehensive with supporting legal citations. I then contacted the general manager, who was kind enough to allow a working copy of the document, which was then modified for our use. So, for example, we would not include water utility files because we don't retain those type of files. We're not in that type of business. So the purpose of this new record retention schedule that we're going to have for you for consideration today is to ensure that record periods are reflective of any changes in law, to reduce current and future record storage costs, eliminate duplication of effort, increase efficiency, and take advantage of current technology. So those are all goals and objectives we hope ultimately will be accomplished with implementing this new schedule. The development of a record retention schedule is driven by many factors, including filing and storing of copies of the same record, allows the district to produce and manage many permanent records, it allows us to avoid any escalating record storage expenses, utilize technological advancements, and incorporating changes in law pertaining to special district records. In the schedule you have for today, and I've just included one example, but this is something that was an outcome from the last meeting, we're proposing a 10-year retention period for the videos of the board meetings. So whereas we do have the minutes, of course, the videos are much more comprehensive in terms of actually capturing everybody's exact quote. So we want to point out that state law mandates only a 90-day retention, and the district's current policy is consistent with that, also 90 days. So we're proposing 10 years so that there's transparency and this issue at least could be handled in this manner. Records that are subject to any claim, litigation, investigation, pending records request, or audit will not be destroyed, and that's indicated at the top page of each schedule. So that's just a clarification or note that folks realize. So we developed ours, at least a draft. We sought out expert consultant services because I wanted to have a check to make sure that ours was consistent and someone that could also look at our records, past, current, and provide some recommendations. We did enter in a contract with Gladwell Government Service, Inc., GGS, I'll use this acronym, has assisted over 150 California municipal governments with their records management. Very, very well, very well recommended, as I said earlier, and including their help with many special districts and agencies. On April 18th, recently, Ms. Gladwell did visit our facility, spent time with staff, including myself, evaluated our records. She looked at our C-train. She went to our admin building. She visited the trailer. Prior to that, to facilitate her visit, we were provided her with our new draft record retention schedule. So she received the schedule, she reviewed it, and she found it within best management practices with a few edits that she provided and that it was legally sufficient. And these edits were incorporated into the version that's proposed for you today. That's attachment number 2. As I previously noted, the district's current retention schedule is incorporated in our O&M manual in Chapter 7. We've prepared a resolution for your consideration today. That's Resolution 2017-367. That's attachment number 3. That would rescind those pages and supersede them with this more comprehensive record retention schedule. This is just another note. It is standard business practice for local governments in California to destroy records in accordance with their record retention policies with the approval of the employee preparing the records. So in this case, the persons that would be authorized would be your district administrator and district council, as provided for and authorized in Section 4 of today's resolution. We've also been provided a form from GGS. That's attachment 4 to the packet. That ensures that there's proper written authorization with signatures, so there's documentation before any official record of the district is destroyed. Again, consistent with current records practices. A little bit of financial considerations. I mentioned this earlier with sort of the purpose. The district should realize significant savings over time and labor costs, storage costs, freeing up of file cabinets and office space, and operational efficiencies when the record retention schedule is fully implemented. In conclusion, the preparation and option of a new record retention schedule, we believe, is an important first step in managing the district's records now and into the future. We've drafted a new record retention schedule, and it's been reviewed by a records expert incorporating the latest record retention policies and laws. We've also prepared Resolution 2017-367 for consideration to approve in conjunction with this new record retention schedule. And here's the staff recommendation today for you to consider if you so choose to approve this new district record retention schedule. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Karen, you have any questions?
No.
Jim?
Read it over. It's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, very good. Jim?
I don't have very many questions. One is the mention that GGS has determined that this is legally sufficient, and I'm not aware of their ability to judge whether something's legally sufficient or not, so I would wonder if our council has looked this over briefly, at least enough to determine if the recommendations are indeed legally sufficient, or what the qualification of Gladwell is to provide that assurance.
Okay.
That's one question.
Legal counsel?
Mr. Chair and Director Hill, I have read the records retention schedule as proposed, and the thing that is most critical is that before any records are destroyed, legal counsel has to sign. The process that I've always followed when I've been in that position is to take a look at each record, consider whether it is time to legally destroy it, whether as a matter of historical need, there's some other reason for keeping the record. And so with that additional check on any records management system, we should be in compliance with the law in every case.
Okay.
I guess my concern would be that if we approve this, then this schedule would be set up probably as the benchmark against which the individual record checking that you mentioned would be compared with. And so, again, my concern is that the proposed schedule has been reviewed for legal compliance.
Okay.
Well,
just a clarification. So, should the board adopt this resolution and this policy before any documents would be destroyed? They would be looked at by the district administrator and legal counsel, and you report out to this board, correct?
The way that I understand the proposal, the schedule would be acted on by the board at such time as documents are actually proposed for destruction. Then they would be presented to the district administrator and legal counsel, along with this form that's been supplied by Gladwell and Associates, which is very similar to the forms that I've used throughout my career. And at that point, there's an additional, you might call it, check by legal counsel.
Okay. Maybe my concern is, I'm not expressing it well, is that what we're being asked essentially to do here is approve a template that includes various categories of documents and durations of retention associated with each. And typically, if we do something like this, then when individual records come up for review, they would say, okay, this is a bid and agreement for purchase surplus of equipment or services. I look on this chart, it says 5 years. This is indeed 5 years old. Therefore, it goes in the destruction bin. I guess my concern is, has legal counsel reviewed each of these categories? We have the assurances from Gladwell indicating that this is in legal compliance, but again, I don't know their qualification to provide that judgment, and I'm now becoming concerned that it doesn't look like our legal counsel has reviewed the work for compliance in each case.
Legal counsel.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hill. It is true that legal counsel could do a complete and thorough review of every single citation that's been provided. In many cases, there is no authority for how long to keep something. It becomes a practical matter. And so that is why the key thing is that legal counsel review at the time proposed for discussion. All of these citations on the list could be verified by legal counsel, and at the time that documents are proposed for destruction, the citations could have changed. That's why I'm in support of legal counsel reviewing at the end of the process. These citations that appear are good guidelines for today, but with legal, with laws, anything that you do is a snapshot for today, and it can all change tomorrow. So if the board is ever going to adopt a policy, there's always going to be a legal person out there saying, but what about if something got updated? And that's why I think the process proposed by this policy is good. I think that the qualifications of the person who came to help the district are excellent, and that having a snapshot is the best we can ever do with regard to legal things.
Thank you, legal counsel.
Thank you.
I have
I think that's the kind of assurance I was looking for, so thank you for that.
I don't know if that helps at all, but when the Oceano Community Service District, their legal counsel prepared all those citations when they adopted it. We didn't modify any of those.
Okay. And then I did want to make sure that we highlighted for those, someone who may not have had a chance to review the schedule in these documents, there is a note at the top that says this excludes records that are subject to any claim, litigation, investigation, pending record request, or audit. So that is on these forms, and that will be followed. So I would just say at this point, let me open this up to the public to see if there's anyone who has any comments on the item that is before the board.
I have one other question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for that. My one other question is, I'm concerned also that the board doesn't authorize destruction of records, which may be a pro forma authorization, but I see that we authorized broken down hand tools to be surplused for 50 cents or something like that, but similarly we don't authorize destruction of the board's records. So I would like to see added to this authorization by the board.
Okay, and we can have that discussion after we hear from the community.
Thank you.
Very good.
Hello, board. I am Amy Simpson. I'm very glad to see this item come forward. I look forward to being a part of this process. I do not agree with the destruction policy portion of it. Not having board approval is a concern to me, and I believe that can be a simple consent item. That's typically what I learned at the board secretary conferences, that destruction records are approved by the board on the consent agenda. Considering that our administrator did not recall multiple staff discussions regarding digester being budgeted, the fact that he didn't recall authorizing deletion of audio files, even though paper trail does exist.
Ms. Simpson, I need you to focus on the item before us, please. Thank you.
I cannot support the records destruction form with only two staffed signatures, being legal counsel and district administration. I ask the board to approve the retention policy, but add that the board authorization be required to destroy the records.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson, my comment was similar. I know that sitting on the Grover Beach City Council, and many times when we did record destruction, there was an item on the board. It was similar to what maybe Amy said. It would be an item on the board. These are the records that are going to be destroyed, and there would be a resolution that would go with that, and we had the right to review them or discuss them, and then there was a resolution that would be passed, and I think that would be a good practice with this board.
Anyone else?
I'm just wondering if Ms. Simpson was standing up here speaking as a resident or as a person who works at the Sanitation District. Thank you.
Very good. Well, just a sec. It is a valid comment because I don't know if she had identified herself as a private citizen as you were speaking. Can we just get clarification? Okay, thank you.
Amy Simpson. Well, I'm Julie Tacker.
Okay.
And I was a little, and this goes back, Mr. Huebner's characterization of what's in the C-train and the sort of the disarray that's there. Mr. Knutson said the same thing. What's got me puzzled, and one of the reasons that I supported an investigation into Mr. Wallace, was the Wallace Group billed your district upwards of $20,000 to catalog, digitize, and purge documents. 57 boxes of documents went to the Wallace Group and went through this process, and you had to pay to get them back. So why are they in disarray? Is that the quality of work that money bought?
Julie, and, are you? I need you to.
Well, and this,
on the
I am. I am, John.
Template,
trust me, I am.
Did.
My Please. Point is, those invoices are some years old and likely ready for destruction. There's so much going on in this district with regard to investigations and other things. Even the minutia of that needs to be retained with board oversight, and the benefit of the public in a consent item is that sometimes public, I've been coming to these meetings since 2009, Mrs. Price, we have a longer memory than staff or board members because we've been here. So we may add value to the administrator's opinion of what should be disposed of, or legal counsel's, and that's why they really do need to come in public. I've seen this practice in every single district and every city. I can't believe that this is not even legal. I just can't. I'm sort of surprised. The I have one experience where you have a retention policy on email that is 30 days. I requested something that wasn't 30 days old from your district, and it had already been destroyed. So I have a problem with that. And then, you know, IT people can get that stuff back. So to be told that I can't have it is problematic. And then lastly, and this is on a larger scale, I should be testifying before Congress, in the day and age of gigabytes, megabytes, clouds, and digital, nothing needs to be destroyed.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. You know that I will say that I agree that the board should authorize the destruction. You are the ones who are accountable to the voting public. And that would be our only recourse. And I think it's important that it be public. Also, I think it provides an opportunity for the board to extend the retirement of certain documents if they find it's necessary. And that can happen in certain instances. I can't think of one at the moment, but it could happen. It does allow that opportunity. I noticed the effective date of this policy will be immediately after it's adopted. And so I was wondering if we have any idea of which documents might be up for destruction immediately. Oh, one other thing. Did I understand that videos would be retained for 10 years?
Great.
Is that
Thanks.
What I heard?
Well, I'll get clarification on that, Sharon.
Mary Lucy Oceano. I agree with Wendy that, you know, that the things should be reviewed at the end, right? As far as the time limit goes, I think that that's entirely up to the board to determine those fine points. But the thing that wants me to have addressed is that is the confidentiality that are in those documents. Some of those documents have people's personal addresses, and when companies or individuals are fishing for customers, right, they will get mass public documents, and they'll go through those documents, and they'll pull down those engineers, and they'll pull down that public information, and they'll knock on their door, and they'll call them on the phone, and they'll call their bosses. And we've already had a case where that's happened, you know, where a document was downloaded, somebody handwrote somebody's address in there and loaded it back up. That document originally came from this district. And so the confidentiality of the documents has not been addressed, which I think is important. Also, too, is I think that people have the right to get up here and say, my name is Mickey Mouse from, you know, Disneyland or whatever, right? But I don't think you should be able to request documents under a company name that doesn't exist. I just think that it's false. And there's got to be some way of knowing where our documents are going, because we don't want them to create harm in the future.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else?
Just briefly, I agree that this should be reviewed by the board, and not, it needs to go through the board before we get rid of any documents. And also, like Julie, I tend to agree. I mean, why do we even need to dispose of most of them? Because, you know, if they're digital, it really doesn't take up space. And I got the board packet this morning, and I've got, it's at the bottom, it says item 6B, attachment number 1, page 4. And at the top of the page, it says audio, video, electronic recording of meetings, 90 days. And I was wondering what that was about. If we're keeping them for 10 years, why the 90-day thing on the page?
Okay. Is there anyone else? And close it and bring it back to the board. Mr. Huebner, I think there was the question on the videotapes, and I think Ms. Price just asked the question, and then I think Ms. Brown asked the question regarding the retention of that.
Can so you just clarify? The 90 days that Ms. Price referred to is within the old records retention schedule contained in our O&M. What we're proposing with the new schedule is 10 years for videotapes.
And then I think Ms. Lucy had brought up the issue of confidentiality. I don't know if that's something you can respond to or if that's something that legal counsel can respond to.
Mr. Chair, that's a concern that we would have to review as legal counsel. And the process as proposed with the addition of the board could accommodate that.
Okay. Very good. Karen, you have something?
I have a question. Yeah, on page 3 of the records retention schedule, it says videotapes, CDs, and DVDs of public meetings, 2 years.
What page are you on, Karen?
I'm on page 3
I do see that. That should be, certainly that should be 10 years. That was a recommendation out of the consultant, and so that change apparently did not make it into the draft that you have before you.
And they are all recommendations, and everyone,
correct.
Please, as a courtesy to everyone. Okay.
So, and there is the legally minimum amount, and that is way and above the 90 days that state law requires. So in many cases, you have discretion to, as long as you don't go below a minimum threshold, you can set it at any amount you would like. We use these as guidance based, again, on what others have done, our record retention expert looking at that and finding that it meets the minimum threshold, and in many cases exceeds that in many cases.
Okay.
Wouldn't all that stuff deteriorate in 10 years?
Well,
that's a question.
The videotapes are housed through our contract through AGP Video. So yeah. One of the things we want to definitely make sure is that as they're housed there, that when either we continue the or we have backup. So that's something that definitely to explore. But your point is well taken, and I want to...
It just seems so all of this stuff to me seems so long. I won't be here in 10 years, but but the technology in 10 years, they may not even be, so it might be difficult to even get them. I mean, I question this in Oceana too. Sure. It just seems so excessive.
So maybe I need to clarify a little bit of misconception. Most of our records are not digital. In the sense,
yeah.
If you look at the C-Train and those drawings and everything else, they're not in electronic form. This is the first step. The next step would be, of course, organizing, finding what we have paper. So the question is, what is ready for destruction? They're not. We have to have the schedule first. Then we have to have them organized. Then I would propose to you at some point some to be digitized so we get in that electronic form. Get them up to our website. That would be the direction over time that you'd have very little paper, but you're not there. And I would also add the reason that the C-Train is in the condition it is not because of the Wallace, but because when the DA brought back the files, they brought them back, and they brought them in, but they brought them in as quickly as possible. And we have not had the resources to do anything further from that. So just a clarification.
Okay, so let's just do... This is a recommendation from the staff with help from an expert who does this throughout. The board can increase the number of years should we choose. That's a decision we need to make. And the only thing I will offer is that electronic files do take up space. There is a cost. I work for a company that you would think has a ton of storage, yet we have programs where when we reach capacity, I can't even send an email. I can receive them. So I just want to clear that up. But let's see if there's – I think the practice of reporting out to the board, whether it's through consent or otherwise, I think is consistent. I know that's what we do in the city of Grover Beach, even though I'm not a peer representing the city of Grover Beach. And I think that's a board decision to make. So at this point, let's see what the board is inclined to do with this. And I would just say folks have been asking for something similar to this. I think we're taking steps in a good direction. So let's see if we've got some if there's someone prepared to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion with your permission, and that is that we approve the resolution number 2017-367 with two changes, those being one, that destruction of records be approved by the board, and second, that 10 years retention of the board meeting videos is retained.
Okay.
Can we? I will second that. Yeah. Then I'll second. Ask a question.
Okay.
Does this resolution need to be redrafted and voted on later, or can we do it tonight? Technical question.
Yeah. Legal counsel?
Mr. Chair and Director White, the resolution can be voted on tonight, and then staff can make the resolution match what the board votes on, and then the chair can sign the resolution later.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's a motion.
Yeah.
There is a second.
Discussion?
Yes, Jim.
Throughout this staff report, I seem to be detecting confusion between records retention, which the proposed action is and record storage. And those are two separate issues, and I have great concern about record storage, because if records aren't properly stored, there's no guarantee that records will meet their retention schedule. So it appears to me that we need to look seriously and perhaps quickly at our record storage practices toward our ability to meet our retention schedule.
That's, I think, a fair comment. So what's before us tonight is the retention schedule, and I think we can give staff some direction on that. And I think there's a consensus. So there is a motion. There is a second. Let's do a roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Chair Scholes?
Yes. Let's move on to item 6C. This is an update on coastal development permit for the district's wastewater redundancy project. Mr. Huebner.
Thank you, Chair Scholes, directors, Gerhard Huebner, members of the audience. This is item 6C. This is an update on our coastal development permit for the district's wastewater redundancy project. So if you recall, in early 2016, district staff, in conjunction with the consultant team, John Rickenbach, MKN Associates, and Kennedy Jenks, along with ESA, helped pursue a coastal development permit from the California Coastal Commission. So you'll hear me say CDP quite often. That's the acronym. So in March of last year, March 11th, a CDP application was filed with the commission. So I have a little bit of chronology here. I'll go briefly through this. Following April, after we submitted our application, the Coastal Commission or the Coastal Commission staff submitted comments on the district's 2016 CDP application. Between April and August of that year, we worked with our consultants to initiate and complete studies, data, and information requested by commission staff. August 5th, responses were submitted to the April 15th letter and consisted really of five major attachments, updated site plans, biological surveys that occurred at the plant, the facility, a sea level rise analysis, flood risk mitigation strategies, and site photos. And there was climate change analysis included with that sea level rise analysis. Also submitted the one-page form from the County of San Luis Obispo on the permitting determination that was also requested. As you recall, the board acted upon a CEQA document, the CEQA addendum, at your September 9th meeting. That was also submitted, and so in October that year, we received the Coastal Commission. They responded to our September 8th submittal, and in October, we provided answers to their questions posed in their October 13th letter. And we've updated the project facility design plans and provided them project descriptions, project design plans on past and proposed projects. So there was additional permitting that needed to be done on projects that either were proposed or had been built or had been previously constructed and installed. So what I'm trying to do with the sequence is there's been a real engagement over the past year with coastal staff. It's been a good engagement. It has required significant effort, and that's why I'm trying to provide this chronology to you today. Fast forward now to January. We're a little concerned. We hadn't heard from coastal staff. We requested an update, responded pretty quickly, and reported to us that they had been working on it, had been busy, and they had other priorities at that time or things in the queue, but that they were targeting for consideration our CDP at their May meeting. So from February to April, and really almost to today, we've been engaging them with information, clarification, any change in projects. We've tried to do that in real time to keep this project moving. As I think you'll agree, this is a priority. It's been a priority for the district. I've taken it as a priority for the district to continue to move this forward to get it to hearing. A little overview of our facility, and just to remind folks where the redundancy project is designed or scheduled to take place or be constructed. So if you can see on the monitor above, and I don't know that this is going to show up very well, but can't step away from the mic because of the videotaping. But if you look on the site plan between the two primary clarifiers on the grassy area going all the way towards the storage facility, essentially where the aeration basin is scheduled to go, and then that area that has the, it looks like graded area, a little bit of asphalt, that's essentially where the secondary clarifier is proposed to go. So, April 21st, not too long ago, Coastal staff released their staff report and CDP. We've included that as part of the staff package today, and for the members of the audience, that's attachment one, and includes standard and special conditions, findings and declarations, the project description, what they call their standard of review. And then there's a whole series of analysis that they do, whether it's hazard, coastal hazards, marine and water quality, scenic, public resources, ESHA, or environmentally sensitive habitat areas, any violations, in this case, because we constructed things at our facility in the past that did not have proper coastal permits, and then California Environment and Quality Act or CEQA compliance. So, great news. Coastal staff are recommending to the commission that the CDP be approved with the conditions listed in their staff report and package. So I'm going to go through a little bit of the conditions. This is the first one. Approved project improves the installation of the district's redundancy equipment and related development, including floodproofing, past and near-term improvement projects. So this is the grit removal systems, our headworks, our proposed biosolids concrete slab, and then our chlorine contact chamber that was actually constructed in 2004. So they have a duration, what they're calling a duration of authorization. So they'll be authorized for 10 years from date of approval. In 10 years, the district would need to submit a complete CDP amendment request with all the necessary information identified by the staff to the Coastal Commission prior to the expiration date of the CDP. So essentially, and I'll put the analogy similar to what we have for the regional board, our MPDS permit, every 5 years, we need to submit an application. We have to describe what's changed, what's proposed to be changed, quality of effluent, so forth, and any studies that they had required. I will get in a moment to describe some of those studies that they would indicate is with all necessary information. What needs to be very clear is this condition does not require the district to move its wastewater treatment plant nor its redundancy project in 10 years, but rather requires the district to complete and submit the plans and information to Coastal Commission, evaluating the potential costs, benefits, options, and the feasibility of a future off-site wastewater treatment plant relocation. So just to be very clear, and I've confirmed this with Coastal staff, that this is their interpretation of their permit. So prior to us being able to construct, one of the things is I want to see our design plans. As you know, we have not proceeded to design yet because we wanted to see how the permitting would proceed before Coastal. So Coastal would want to see that prior to the issuance of their final permit and before we can do construction. So the first plan that they are requesting as part of the CDP is within 6 months, middle of a monitoring plan. And the way it's been described to me is essentially any flood events, rain events, would be perhaps photographed, documented, any data that goes with it, so and any impacts, if any. So over a period of time, there would be a record created of flood events or rain events and any impact that that would have to our facility and perhaps even the surrounding community. So pretty straightforward. Monitoring plan. The second one is what's called a life expectancy analysis. That's required to be submitted, prepared and submitted within 2 years of approval. So that analysis is to include an evaluation of the annual and long-term cost of maintaining the plant in its current location, including information of each component at our facility, date of installation, upgraded component dates, their condition, any major upgrade events, and any expected lifespan or repair, maintenance, and placement costs. So they want to look at what our assets are, what's their life expectancy, how we plan to repair them, is there, and so providing information really in sort of a CIP replacement plan, but on an ongoing basis. They also want to include any cost of anticipated habitat mitigation requirements from impacts from potential flood control projects and conclusions regarding a point in time where investments in the infrastructure outweigh investing in the relocated plant. So are you spending more money upgrading or maintaining the facilities versus wholesale moving and purchasing a new facility and location? Third plan, submittal of what they're called a coastal hazard response plan. That needs to be submitted within 5 years of approval. And this plan is intended to build upon the district's technical memorandum of September 9, 2016 by MKN Associates. This plan is to provide a clear long-term planning document for addressing flooding and other coastal hazards, any coastal resource impacts at the district's plan over the long term, and also to provide a detailed cost analysis, cost of any land purchases off-site, what it would cost to decommission if we were to pursue that, and restoration of the existing site, cost to upgrade the plant to full tertiary treatment and any water recycling and any other associated costs. The plan also included a timeline for relocation events, land acquisition, planning, permitting, design, construction. So what would it take if at some point in the future, and this could be 10 years, it could be 20 years, it could be somewhere in the future, yet to be defined, what it would entail to plan, implement, cost, and ultimately decommission our site and relocate. Other conditions, these are pretty standard. They want to see the construction plan and site documents and that we would hire a construction coordinator that would work with the public in terms of construction details, times of operation of construction. There's limits in terms of that. There's also a requirement for what they're calling public view camouflage verification. It's a long term, but really they're looking at making sure that our structures are not visible from Highway 1, and at least the new structures would blend in, and there's a suggestion, perhaps, that some of our existing, like our digesters, they're painted white, that we might consider camouflaging them with a green or earth tone paint. So that's the intent of that one. There's also these last two, which are pretty standard, what I've seen in other coastal permits, where there's an assumption of risk, waiver of liability, and indemnification, and indemnification for permittee, liability for costs and attorney fees. Essentially, if there's harm that comes from the redundancy project, they wouldn't be held responsible, the Coastal Commission. And then if there was any suit related to this permit, that there would be again be cost of attorney fees. So in anticipation of this May 2017 Coastal Commission hearing, we received support letters. So we drafted a template, I distributed, I contacted my peers out in the community because my experience is this, you can never take for granted a Coastal Commission hearing process, and we definitely wanted to make ensure that the support that we felt it was out there, that we could immortalize it in some type of written format. So you'll see later a discussion of some of the presentations I've made, but I just want to list, and we've included letters of support we received from Grover Beach, City of Pismo. We do not have the City of Pismo Beach or Aurora Grande, but I do have copies of those. I got those today, and I have transmitted to make sure the Coastal has seen those. But we have Grover Beaches and Oceano's Community Service Districts, as well as the Regional Water Quality Control Board, included as part of the staff report. So in conclusion, I really want to just kind of emphasize really a milestone with the release of this CDP, which is set for consideration at the Coastal Commission meeting in San Diego on May 10th. So it's really been a long process, and we're not quite done, but we've done considerable work to get it to this day. In the near term, we're going to continue to work with engaged Coastal staff leading up to the May 10th hearing to understand any additional analysis, any comments they receive. We're also likely, or we already have, and posed them with additional questions and comments so that we're best representing the district's interest. And finally, we'll be attending and presenting on the May 10th, of course, to voice our support for the district's redundancy project agenda item. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. This is a receive and file report.
Thank you for this thorough report. Mr. Huebner, will this 10-year, this condition requiring the 10-year authorization, would that affect the district's ability to get funding to construct this project?
I do not believe it will. And I base that on information that I received today. Our consultant, did contact the state revolving fund loan folks in Sacramento. They said they were not concerned with the 10-year reauthorization. They said that's something they see in the past. They said the key thing is that the board has a rate structure to pay back the loan. Mike Nunley is here, and Mike can attest to you, or better, if I haven't clarified to you, he can provide additional details on his conversation that he had. We also just talked with Alex Handler. As you recall, Alex was here, I believe it was the last board meeting, when we talked about the state revolving fund loan resolutions and his rate studies. So if for a reason we can't get the state revolving fund loan, we would go to the bond market. Again, he did not feel that would be problematic. We would have to disclose it, of course. But again, having the rate structure, the rate in place to pay back any loans is the key. So that was really good news, because we were a bit worried what this 10-year might do to financing, and we had actually expressed that to Coastal. And they said that was not their intent with that 10-year authorization. So, okay. Good news.
That is good news. And then I would also ask, so you called out the Coastal Hazards Monitoring Plan, the Life Expectancy Analysis, the Coastal Hazards Response Plan, and let's just be a positive thinking that the commission approves this with these conditions. Would you, the staff at that time, one, determine the cost for these plans, and then would you be looking at options or ways to pay for this and come to the board with that?
Absolutely. Well, first, we would have to, anticipating this, we would budget for that monitoring plan and looking to seek services to how we would, that would be drafted. In subsequent years, as we get closer to the two-year plan submittal, again, we would have, I can't give you at this point how much those would cost. Of course, there would be a cost involved with developing those. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to speculate. But certainly, those would be brought before you. We would estimate through the budgeting process, and then any contracts, if they exceed a certain threshold, would come to your board for approval.
Very good. And then I just have to comment on this public view camouflage verification. Is that new? I don't know if it's new, but I've never seen the term used.
I haven't either. Although I do know that the commission staff and things I've seen in the past, they are very concerned with view sheds Highway 1 corridor issues, so...
No pink tanks.
No pink. And when I discussed this with the planner, I said, I don't... the new concrete basins are gray. You can't see them. And what really stood out is he reminded me that our primary digesters are painted white, and as you go over the bridge, over the railroads, you can see that white. So, but that's... Those are already permitted in there, and anyway, they suggested if and when we do remodeling that we might consider them painting a different color than white.
Okay. I wonder if Karen, they're doing that for water tanks as well. I mean, that's just off the cuff. I guess you wouldn't know. But
It depends if the item had to, if somebody needed to get a, through the Coastal Commission at CDP, it may be a requirement.
Yeah, thank you.
Jim?
I've been a strong proponent of the redundancy project, as you know, for my entire tenure on the board. And I have to say that I'm disappointed in this report, primarily the 10 years. And I want to read the actual attachment from the Coastal Commission special conditions. By acceptance of this coastal development permit, the permittee, that's us, acknowledges and agrees that the intent of this approval is an interim and thus temporary authorization for the approved project in order to allow for the continued operation and function of the Sanitation District wastewater treatment plant in the shorter term, including to protect water quality and public health, while simultaneously allowing time to plan and consider alternatives for future wastewater treatment plant relocation away from the coastal hazard risks in the longer term. So their clear intent is to authorize for 10 years while the district undertakes studies to relocate the plant. I'm very concerned. I thought that if I understood Mr. Handler's presentation at the last meeting that we were seeking effectively 30-year financing. Typically, things were built with a 40-year projected service life based on Internal Revenue Service depreciation schedules. But be that as it may, equipment of this type can operate a long time and when the time comes, could be replaced on site in effectively the same or an immediately adjacent location, probably at far less cost than to relocate the entire plant at a new place, which would, away from the coastal zone, involve pumps and other equipment that would have reliability issues and such. I'm very concerned about having something that may have the plug pulled from it in 10 years while we still have a 30-year obligation to pay for it. And I'm just very concerned about the viability of that. I'd like to know who's representing us at the Coastal Commission. The letter that the City of Arroyo Grande sent in support of the redundancy project requested a 30-year authorization, which would coincide with funding for a project such as this. And, you know, I think that once we engage in the redundancy project, we should be looking forward to tertiary treatment and recycling. And I think our style would be dramatically cramped if we were simultaneously looking at relocating facilities, and I'm concerned with the potential partnership with Pismo Beach and so forth. So I would urge jurisdictions to support a 30-year approval rather than a 10-year temporary permit. I don't know how we're going to fund it. I'd like to hear from Mr. Handler. Bond issue on a 30-year bond is typically given to something that has a far longer service life expectancy than 10 years. The State Revolving Fund, I'm not as familiar with that, but I am familiar with trying to have a if you buy a car and you finance the car over 10 years or something and the service life is more like 5 years, I think many people have experienced the bad position that you're in when you have to pay off something over a long period when the thing you're paying for has long since reached the end of its service life. So I'm very concerned about the whole turn of events.
Mr. Handler's not here this evening, correct?
That's correct. He's not even retained. He provided the advice. He's not under contract for us to do any further work than what he previously did. So he provided that information to Mr. Nunley. And Mr. Nunley, again, is here. Then he can clarify if I missed anything. So,
Mr. Nunley, can you?
Good evening. So I'd like to briefly relay the conversation that I had both with Alex Handlers and also with Joshua Fagerger at the State Water Resource Control Board, who's the project manager that is in charge of reviewing our State Revolving Loan Fund construction loan application for the Clean Water SRF program. So the conversation I had with Alex, we talked a little bit about what constraints or issues could be expected from the bond market as a result of this condition in the coastal development permit. And, you know, in Alex's experience, and they provide advice to many agencies around California, many special districts, many cities, many counties. His sense was that you have to always disclose all your permit conditions when you go out to the bond market. But his sense was there are many conditions that can show up in permits for a project that are similar to this one. And there are many times when agencies intentionally build, and I'm not saying this is intentionally built that way, but there are cases where some agencies may build a project that only may only be in service 10, 15 years because it's to meet some interim need, but they may finance it over a longer period. And he said the biggest concern for most underwriters is the agency's ability to repay to repay the loan, or to repay the debt service on the bond. In the discussions I had with the State Revolving Loan Fund program, their sense was, I went through it with them, and they said, oh, yeah, we've seen that before. And he said he didn't see any issues with that regarding the ability to get funding or how the district would be considered for the loan application. So I did want to point out a few things, too, just to provide a little more context to Coastal Commission's comments. We've spent a lot of time talking with Coastal over the last several months. There are some clarification I think is important. In the actual staff report that Coastal Commission put together, some of what they acknowledge is that in the study that ESA performed on sea level rise, really it's the potential for flooding and the potential impact of future sea level rise on flooding were really one of their areas of biggest concern. And what we had, what ESA had concluded was when you get into the 2050 time range, that what we consider to be the 1% storm frequency becomes more frequent. When you get to 2100, then the level of frequency increases further. And so the time frames we're talking about when we talk about near term and long term is not really nailed down in that Coastal Commission discussion, and particularly in the section you were talking about. But in the discussions we've had with Coastal Commission, staff's indicated that their expectation is if you complete the studies and you do the monitoring and you show that the flooding risk is not significantly increasing at the plant as a result of outside conditions over that 10-year period, that staff said we could see just authorizing you to keep going. But they need to see that information and they need to see that data. One of the issues with the redundancy project is it's a project that regional board asked you to do many years ago. And it's a project that's necessary really to protect water quality now. And Coastal Commission staff understands that. Regional Water Quality Control Board's been a great advocate for the project, and they've actually talked to Coastal Commission staff. I don't even think we asked them to do that. I think that just happened. Because they recognize that it's necessary in the event that you had any kind of a catastrophic failure of your fixed film reactor or of your secondary clarifier. So whatever you may do in the long term or may not do, that project, State Water Resource, Regional Water Quality Control Board views that as a necessity for your permit compliance. And Coastal Commission understands that, the staff does. So I just wanted to add clarification to that.
Well, you mentioned the number one concern being ability to repay the debt service on the bond. And all these good people are the ones who would be repaying the debt service on the bond.
Likewise, I'm a customer too of the district, so I view it the same way.
So I'm very concerned with the potential impact on our ratepayers.
So I would just say, I think we've talked about this. The preference would be to go through the state revolving loan fund. And if that is not, we're not successful there, then that is an option.
Correct? That's correct. That is plan B okay. for financing. That's not plan A.
Very good. Thank you. And I'm just going to ask this question. I don't know if you have an answer. This whole thing about potentially relocating this plant, do we have an idea of what that might even cost? And I know I'm just asking for I'm not going to call it a wild guess, but I think an informed gas that can be refined.
We do, actually. MKN put together that analysis for us, and based on their experience with other treatment plants being constructed. And Mike, you want to provide that figure?
Yeah, so the range of numbers that we, and this was a Coastal Commission request as part of the application. One of the review comments was, well, how much would it cost to relocate the plant anyway? I mean, our estimate is you're looking in the neighborhood of $150, $200 million. To relocate the plant. It is a significant amount of money.
Thank you.
And so to put that in comparison, the redundancy project is a $20 million project.
Right.
And the rates that you've adopted to support a $20 million project, so you can imagine what the rates would be to relocate. So.
Very good. So then, I don't have any other questions. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm just going to read a comment from the Coastal Commission staff report. Mr. Nunley, and thank you for those answers.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Chair Scholes, as I mentioned, too, we continue to have dialogue with them on this particular issue. They've indicated, too, that they're willing to provide some clarification or even some verbal at the commission meeting. Specifically, we were also concerned with that word temporary, so we'll see, of course, what those comments would be, but that was, again, I tried to explain the difference between a temporary and an interim. Okay. And so
basically, for those who haven't had a chance to see staff report or read the Coastal Commission report, there's a paragraph in here in which the Coastal Commission staff, it says, Coastal Commission staff believe the proposed redundancy infrastructure is necessary and warranted in the near term and critical to avoiding potential water quality problems, and notes that it is also anticipated by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. The other new proposed development and ATF development is minor and provides needed improvements to ensure a functioning facility and one that helps to protect human health and the environment and prevent sewage spills due to aging infrastructure. Finally, the floodproofing work ensures certain critical components are above the 100-year flood elevation. These are all appropriate approvals in the near term. That is the Coastal Commission staff. I would also just emphasize that you are providing information tonight. Apparently, the Coastal Commission will be meeting next Wednesday on this, and Jim, I think you touched on this, making sure that we have folks who are there to advocate, and I think those are valid points, and I think as we all know, Coastal Commission will put conditions in. It's incumbent upon us to try and get them to change some of these conditions to put us in a better position to be successful.
One further question is if we involve Kennedy Jenks at all in the Mr. Nunley might know the answer to that, if we've involved Kennedy Jenks in our submittal to the Coastal Commission and or our interaction with them.
Yes, we have. Kennedy Jenks put together a memorandum to discuss floodproofing approaches at the plant. Part of their design contract includes floodproofing of some existing facilities. So they wrote that up, since they'll be the design engineers for that part. They've also been engaged in the various discussions, some that we've had with Coastal, and reviewing the deliverables to make sure anything that we talk about. We've tried to be very careful about two things. You don't want two engineers doing the same job, and you want your design engineer to propose and look at the floodproofing modifications so that that's all consistent with their construction plans. So they've been involved with that. ESA is actually a subconsultant to Kennedy Jenks, so they've been involved through Kennedy Jenks as well for the sea level rise analysis.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'm going to open this up to the community, see if there's someone who would like to address this item.
Good evening, Board. My name is John Clemens. I live in Oceano. I'd like to lend some expertise. I am probably the biggest proponent of redundancy at the South Sand plant. I think that I continue to be the biggest proponent of redundancy at the South San Luis Obispo County plant. And as the district planned redundancy, the plan was for a 30-year plan. At this point, the Coastal Commission has possibly changed that, in that they gave us, at this point, what they're calling a temporary. And that doesn't change the need for redundancy. We still need to do it. But it may change in what form. I mean, there needs to be a discussion. As someone noted, the ratepayers are the ones who are going to be paying. So essentially, it's a gamble. Mr. Scholes, you said yourself how fickle and how dealing with the Coastal Commission at times can be tricky. They've given us a 10-year temporary, or they're going to give us. We don't know how they're going to be composed or what they're going to be thinking 10 years from now. So it's a gamble, and I'm not saying I have a solution. My point in making my comments tonight is that we need to discuss that. We need to see if we're willing to gamble on the mood of the Coastal Commission 10 years from now. And not saying that we would cancel redundancy, but maybe we change the form in which we do it, or the process and how we do it. There needs to be further discussion, because the Coastal Commission has hit us with something that we didn't anticipate. And since the playing field's changed, there should be more discussion on, are we willing to tolerate this opportunity? We don't know what the weather conditions are going to change. With the current weather conditions, they change from year to year. We don't know if we'll meet the requirement of the Coastal Commission 10 years from now. Nobody here today can predict that. Nobody here today can predict how the Coastal Commission will be composed in 10 years. So again, we still need to do redundancy, and we need to do it as quickly as possible. But do we need to do it in the form that we currently have planned? Maybe we make some amendments. Maybe we choose a less expensive option in the short term, because there are less expensive options. And then that way we don't put a burden, because there is that chance that we put this burden on our ratepayers now, and the Coastal Commission or the weather conditions change, and in 10 years we are required to take out another loan to build a $200 million plant. And by the way, another thing in delaying building another plant, if we know we're going to have to, is that it's going to be more costly to do in the future.
Thank you for those comments.
Just we need to consider and look at what we're doing.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Scholes, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. Given the proposed conditions of approval, it appears that you're going to need your project team, including Mr. Nunley, for the next 10 years or more, and that could be very expensive to this district, ballooning the $22 million project cost. One thing I didn't hear is that your entire site is in the area of Commission Original Jurisdiction, known as COJ. COJ is typically associated with wetlands and tidelands. meaning the water is there. In fact, as you know, you have high groundwater at this site. It's anywhere from 5 to 10 feet, based on my recollection. You have facilities that are underground. And sea level rise may not produce waves lapping up at the facility, but sea level rise affects the level of groundwater. And I question whether or not any of the analysis has included that type of discussion. The Coastal Commission agenda next Wednesday, by the way, this permit was supposed to be a consent item, according to your administrator, and clearly it's not, and I don't believe the Coastal Commission will move it to consent. I can almost bet on that. So, you know, the whole project has been misrepresented from the beginning, and moreover, the ease of the permitting has particularly been misrepresented. On that May 10th agenda, next Wednesday, in advance of your item, is a discussion, item number 5, about sea level rise. It reminds me of the Morro Bay situation, which, by the way, Mr. Nunley has worked on the relocation of the Morro Bay plant for the last, I don't know how many, 3, 4, 5 years. I'm not sure why this case is any different. But that sea level rise discussion, again, is in advance of this, and I think it's going to cause the commissioners to pause about this whole proposal. You've heard about the life expectancy analysis due within 2 years. You cannot floodproof or armor your way out of high groundwater. It simply cannot be done. You can't waterproof all of your facilities. It is impossible. So, you know, the December 2010 flood, while it may seem a distant past, is bound to repeat itself. This site will flood again.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
I don't believe my time is up, Mr.
I'm tracking your time. It's been 3 minutes.
Well, I will just say that this project is not financeable.
Thanks, Jeff.
And the higher interest rate,
Jeff,
and or shorter amortization was not captured in your rate study, and your rate study is obsolete.
Next.
Brad Snook, chair of our local chapter of Surfrider Foundation. Our chapter has already filed a letter on this agenda item with the Coastal Commission. Our chapter also has a lot of experience with the mandatory treat issues with wastewater treatment plants in this county, and with the Surfrider's support, Surfrider National support on Coastal Commission issues. Having to do with a conditional approval from the Coastal Commission here in the county, our chapter dealt with a seawall issue in Pismo Beach, where the Army Corps wanted to build a wall that they wanted to guarantee for a 50-year existence. The Coastal Commission said, we can approve the seawall. However, we want you to come back with a 20-year conditional approval where the study will say that there was no effect to the surrounding bluffs or the beach underneath, which was our concern. Our chapter then said, we will go along with a conditional approval because this is an adaptive policy to sea level rise, to climate change. And that's what the Coastal Commission is after. They want to take benchmark steps and say, okay, is it a problem now? If it is, what are we doing to address it? Now, there might be major flooding in 10 years at the existing site. Why would you want to keep the plant there? Why? You would want to move it. The district should be reviewing alternative site. They should already be doing the return on investment for all the infrastructure that they're adding to the existing site to make sure that it's valuable should they go with an alternative site. This is good business. It is good business to review the potential risks to your infrastructure, and what the Coastal Commission is doing is good for the district in the long term. Our chapter supports managed retreat. Our chapter supports the Coastal Commission staff recommendation on that agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder.
Julie Tacker. Fundamentally, the project is inconsistent with the Coastal Act. So you are bucking the system just with your project description. What Jeff mentioned about the waves are not going to lap against this facility and that groundwater will rise. What also happens is creeks swell. That ocean backs those up and they get wider. You're already between two creeks. The pressures on that property are tremendous just from nature. With regard to the life of the project or the life of the facility, I got this number from Coastal, who got it from your consultants. And I've told you before, he told me, Daniel Robinson told me, that he was told that there's 17 years left for the rest of your facility. So if you have a 10-year temporary authorization and you get a maximum of 17 years out of all the other components, why would you invest $22 million now, that's the price now, into a project that you will have to abandon 12 years before its life is over? What Mr. Clemens just told you is something I've been asking for years about, a temporary facility that does redundant services. You can have a package plant brought onto that site for the temporary time, whatever that is, 10 years or 12 years. The message in this staff report is you need to move your sewer, and it's just a matter of how fast and when you can do it. The Coastal Commission doesn't care what anybody's project costs. They're not swayed by feasibility attached to numbers. Ask anyone in Los Osos. They didn't care that our project reached $183 million. They didn't. What they care about is their charter, and that's all. So $22 million is the price of the redundancy project now. Your regional sustainable groundwater project estimate right now is at 30. You've already got 50 million on the table. You look at this as an opportunity to move the sewer, get your recycling facility included in a brand new state-of-the-art facility out of the Coastal Commission's jurisdiction where they can't tell you anything anymore. Get them off your back. I support the staff's recommendation at the Coastal Commission. I differ with Mr. Hill's opinion on this, and I have for years. But I do support the staff recommendation, and I hope you do too.
Thank you, Julie. Is there anyone else?
Mary Lucy Oceano. Well, if the feds keep moving at the rate they're moving, we won't even have an EPA, so, you know. I actually took that as good news. That plant is, first of all, I want to set the record straight for the people who were not at that flood, which I was at that flood. The plant did not flood. It was the neighborhood that flooded, but the plant was dry. So to say that the plant had flooded in 2010 is just absolutely not true. Okay, so I think it's good news for them to give a conditional 10 years, right? They want the water cleaned up. The only way we're going to get the water cleaned up coming off that plant, right, is to do redundancy and to clean it up. You know, if there's 17 years left in it, then there's 17 years. But I'll tell you, something in it, there's an alarm inside me that's saying there is, once again, the main focus of packing this room full of, you know, opposition to this is to move that plant for somebody's financial gain. And that plant is fine right where it's at. And as a resident of Oceano, we've housed that plant for 27 years, you know, yes, please camouflage those tanks. That's the least you could do for us. Thank you, and I think it's a great project, and thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Amy Simpson, resident of Oceano. I just wanted to ask if we are going to have, now that we know that there may be 10-year temporary, is the board going to have discussions on maybe a smaller scale to make sure that we're not paying for a $30 million plant now and paying to possibly remove the plant as a ratepayer? It concerns me that we'd build a very large plant for redundancy, which I believe we definitely need redundancy, but have we looked at a smaller scale? Thank you.
Thank you.
I also support redundancy. It looks like a nice project. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty.
Debbie Peterson, City of Grover Beach, and I'm not here to weigh in on this. As far as I'm concerned, the jury is still out, except that I support redundancy. However, I am here to state that it is entirely inappropriate to categorize a whole room of people as financially motivated in their comments tonight, just as it was wrong a year or two ago to call a group of people racists. Thank you.
Just very quickly, what Jim read, I read a little further in the report, and the next paragraph, if I'm not mistaken, repeatedly said the district would be looking for an off-site plant, a place to put an off-site plant, that there would be studies done, and we had that 10 years while we were getting ready to move. That was what I understood it to say, and I think that makes sense because at the end of 10 years, if we haven't gotten everything together, at least if we've started, they may give us some more years. I really would support a temporary and less expensive redundancy project, because it doesn't make sense to me to put in something that's really expensive, it's built to last a long time, and then not be able to use it. Maybe we could build one, we could move when we move. It's just obvious to me we are going to have to move at some point. We need to get ready for that. That needs to be the discussion.
Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back. And hey, everyone, come on. This is a review and file a report. And I want to say, as someone who used to work in this field and has extensive experience with Coastal Commission, this is a typical process that no final action has been taken, that basically Wednesday the Coastal Commission will take this up. I know Mr. Huebner is planning on going. I've made arrangements to go and talk to commissioners and others, and to try and represent this community, to see if we can't get some of these conditions changed. We need to move forward with this, and if this is approved, we will take a look at the conditions and see what the implications are of that, and then we can certainly have an opportunity to take a look and see if there are other options. I find it's really unfortunate of where we are, when we know this is required by the Regional Water Quality Control Board and folks who have expressed support for this. And this is a major accomplishment to get to a point where this is going before the Coastal Commission. I have represented clients in the past in which 10 years, 15 years went by, and they couldn't even get a hearing. It actually, you know, so this is an accomplishment, whether people want to admit it or not. But let's see what the Coastal Commission's final action is, and then we'll have to see what is the best way to proceed in the best interest of this community and the ratepayers. So thank you for bringing this forward, letting everyone see what the Coastal Commission is recommending, and we will see how things go next Wednesday. It's actually going to be Tuesday and Wednesday because there is going to be some advocacy that goes on. So with that, it's 8:30. We're going to take a 10-minute break.
Thank you.
I'm going to reconvene the regular meeting for the South Santa Cruz County Sanitation District Board. And we had concluded with item 6C. Before we go to the next item, I would just ask everyone to be respectful of your neighbors. Let's keep the chatter down so folks can hear what's being said. Okay. So we're going to move to item 6D. This is an update to the attorney's contract. And I believe, Ms. Doxson, you were giving the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that is correct. My name is Wendy Stockton. For those of you who haven't met me, hello. November 4th, 2015, the district hired two attorneys. One of them was Mr. Trujillo, and the other one was me. And the way it worked with that hiring was that Mr. Trujillo is the main person who comes to this meeting, so he's a familiar face. And I'm the backup person that comes to these meetings and does kind of what you might call behind-the-scenes legal work. So that's kind of my introduction to myself. And I asked to be able to come here tonight to talk about our contract, which is a topic that nobody likes. But I thought it was important to bring this topic to in front of everyone and to the board. Because of some things that Mr. Trujillo and I have discovered since working for the district. So what we've discovered is that the contract that we entered into to begin with was one that the district was comfortable with because Mr. Seitz had had that contract with the district for quite a while. In fact, Mr. Seitz's law firm had represented the district for, he said, about 50 years. And Mr. Trujillo and I took a lot of the provisions of that contract and brought them into our contract, and we thought it would be a comfortable thing for the district and everyone. There were some other provisions that were our own and unique, but we kept a lot of the old. And what we've discovered is that, A, that is not modern, and B, it's not workable. And for those reasons, we've asked to make the contract both modern and workable. So the contract that we request that we go forward with appears over on the table. You'll see some blue ink on it because what went up on the internet, technology messed with that one a little bit, and it wasn't exactly the words that we were hoping for. So you'll see some blue on that, and the blue that you see is what's a little different from what's online. I explained in the staff report in hopefully a short and clear fashion
exactly what it is that we're hoping to do with the new contract. And I'll summarize it by saying Mr. Trujillo and I would like to pay for all of expenses and the district to pay for none of the expenses. Mr. Trujillo and I would like to be considered for termination with a 30-day notice, if that's what the district would like to do, so the district has the power to say no to us or goodbye to us in fairly short order. And we would also like to raise our rates from $175 per hour to $185 per hour. It's our belief that this raise will take care of the extra expenses that we would be taking on and would also recompense us for the cost of additional, I guess I should say, a raise in rates of malpractice insurance, which happens to all attorneys in the second and succeeding years being under a malpractice insurance policy. So Mr. Trujillo's and my policy went up by 40% this year, and that it was the main impetus for the letter that Mr. Trujillo and I sent regarding a rise in our costs to the district. I apologize for bringing an unpleasant topic to you and the public and to you at the board. I know it's nothing anybody likes to talk about, but I feel it's important that the attorney contract with the district reflect the way that we're actually doing it in the most modern way that we should be handling things, because we as attorneys should be examples in our paperwork. And so I'll take the unpleasantness and answer any questions that you might have. And I thank you very sincerely for the opportunity to speak to you.
Very good. Any questions of Ms. Stockton? Jim?
No, I don't really have any questions about the contract. I understand that this is approximately a 6% increase, but then you would be taking on the expenses, as you said, and I've seen some of the reference library charges and some things like that. Is that what we're basically talking about?
Yes, we're talking about the cost of legal research contract, which is a basic requirement for competency for attorneys. It works better for us to be directly paying the legal research company, and we're able to freely negotiate rates that way and get the product that is needed in order to represent the district. The other major cost, which is even more than the legal library, is the cost of continuing education. Now, of course, we don't know, because they charge whatever they want to for continuing education, but as lawyers, we're expected to maintain a certain level of competency through 25 hours of continuing education every 3 years. Some of those hours need to be participatory, and the best quality legal education we can get is by going to conferences in the area of the clients we're representing, municipal clients. Were I to go today to the conference that Mr. Trujillo is currently attending for continuing education, the cost to me would be more than $2,000. So that gives you kind of an idea of the sort of costs that we look at as attorneys and that we are asking to take on ourselves.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
My only question.
Okay, Jim. Very good. Karen?
Nothing, really.
Okay.
Cost of business goes up everywhere all the time.
Yeah, okay. So let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to address this item.
Mr. Scholes, board members, my name is Jeff Edwards. And clearly, to bring the contract to make it modern and more workable is reasonable, and that's not a concern. What fundamentally is of concern to me is that this matter is somewhat premature, in that typically before contracts are reviewed or modified, there's a performance evaluation. And I'm unaware of the fact that these lawyers have had a performance evaluation. And in that connection, I would have to say that these lawyers in large part have enabled the bad acting of your administrator. And that's problematic. Lawyers are supposed to be independent. They're supposed to represent your board, not Mr. Huebner. And I think that has not been the case. So my suggestion to you, before you do anything, certainly with regard to money, you know where your legal bills stand on a monthly basis now, approaching $30,000 a month. That harkens back to the days of Michael Seitz. Do a performance review and analyze the quality of the work you're getting and the cost. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Getting harder and harder for me to get up out of the chair. Certainly, I think all of us agree that costs are going up for everyone, and that everyone deserves some sort of raise except those of us who are living on Social Security. That's just a personal comment. I will stop that. I do have some concerns with the insertion of number two in blue. If business costs increase, attorneys may raise the hourly rate by providing 1 month's advance written notice to the district administrator. So this isn't on an annual basis, but on an ongoing monthly basis. That concerns me somewhat. I also note, or I perceive, some sort of conflict. They spell out who's responsible for what, and I agree with that. Division of labor, absolutely. Then it says, attorneys shall provide the services referred to up there only as requested by the district board or district administrator. However, neither the district board nor the district administrator may supervise, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. I had a question on that. Let me look. Okay. I had misread this, apparently. I thought it was saying that only the district administrator could request. Okay. I did a little research on my own. I'm having to redo because of some of the changes that are in here, but... I think it's hard for us to determine. I think we have a public perception of what we think attorneys should be accomplishing. And when we don't see the result that we want to see, we are all of a sudden trying to ascribe motivations or who's doing what or that kind of thing. And I think that's a mistake. We have to look at things in the context of what's happening in the district that might require their services, not just who might be requiring, but what's happening in the district. And I think that goes for city councils, any government. Look at the overall picture. But I did note something interesting, that since... in February and in March, the billable hours have increased. That means that something's going on, but I didn't know what. And since we don't have detailed invoices and can't release it anyway, in March, Wendy Stockton 12.7 hours, billable hours. And for per week for Gilbert Trujillo, 16.7 hours per week. So, and previously, I mean, last November, it was 2.9 and 9.5. They have been going up, and I think we need to know what's going on in the district that would require that those kinds of hours.
Thank you, Sharon.
Debbie Peterson from Grover Beach, and I'm not going to waste your time by repeating some of the comments that I've agreed with previously, just some new things. I've always found it helpful in staff reports when we get information on what other cities are doing, what other districts are doing, and how their costs and programs compare with ours. And so I think it would be informative for the district to take a look at what do other special sewer districts spend on their attorney fees, their consultants, and would also be important, I think, to do a review of how many consultants are working for the district right now and what is that cost and how does that cost compare with what the district's intent was initially when they hired an administrator. My understanding was the intent was that the administrator would cover a number of the projects and that would save money, but it seems as though we've just been doubling up on some of our costs. So I think that those kinds of reviews, it's good time for that, and I think it would be useful also to do a personnel review of our attorneys prior to doing anything further and maybe put in some incentive. Reduce your hours and we'll up your money. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and it does make sense to modernize the contract, but I think when you do that, you might actually add a citation recital that says something along the lines that a performance review will be done in accordance with your bylaws. That way they are contractually bound to that. We are guaranteed to see that the $200 a month of LexisNexis ceases to be billed to the district. And then some of the heartburn I've had with the service of Trujillo and Stockton is that we've had to outsource so much of the human resource component of what's gone on at the district in the last year. Liebert Cassidy, now Robin Oaks, and then, of course, you know, we did see Melissa Thorne finally go away. But, you know, outsourcing was done, and it was my hope when these attorneys were hired that they brought that expertise with them. You know, having worked in cities already, that you'd think they'd have a lot of human resource experience, but that's not the case. They've had to outsource. So again, the recital adds something about that and some guarantee that we won't see charges of any kind from the legal research firm.
Everybody, rates go up. As business goes on, rates go up. For what we put these attorneys through lately, 6%, and you've heard me say it time and time again, save us money, save us money, save us money. I'll spend the money. Give them the 6%. But also, I think that you should do a review on them, but I have no problem with the 6%. Thank you for your business.
Anyone else?
I'm Dr. Arnoldson. You, as a board, have two employees, and it's your responsibility to evaluate those two employees once a year. At the facility I work at, everybody is reviewed once a year. So you need to put that on your calendar, and as the chairman, I think that might be your responsibility, John, at least to mention it to the other, your district administrator to make sure that that happens once a year. You should review your attorney once a year. You should review the district administrator once a year. I don't think there's any question with that. And I agree with the fact that the attorneys probably should be reviewed sit down in closed session, review them before you move forward on any new contract. As far as continuing education, I'm required to do 50 hours every 2 years. I just renewed with 105. So there's a different ways of getting continuing education. Get it online for nothing, or you can do seminars and things like that. They can be pretty expensive. I spent 5 days out of the state this year in February doing a pretty extensive one, but expensive one. But that's just part of being a professional. If you're licensed by the Consumer Affairs Department, you're going to do continuing education, and you're going to have to do that every time you renew your license.
Is there anyone else?
Patricia Price, again, just a couple of things.
Can you hold your microphone down to your face?
I had a couple of questions about the actual contract, if I can find my place here. In the original contract, item number 12, it's about attorney's recommendation and authorization to retain special counsel. There's number 9 in the new contract is basically the same thing, although the district also retains its authority to retain special counsel at its sole discretion, with or without recommendation from current district legal counsel and or the administrator. That's left out in this, and I was just wondering why that was left out. Maybe you could speak to that. Then I wanted to know another question I'd like answered tonight, because Wendy's here and I know she can do it. What exactly is special counsel? I mean, I don't understand why we have special counsel, why our attorneys can't handle stuff. I know there's a good reason, but I don't know what it is. And then the other thing was indemnification, number 14, on the new contract and on the old one. It says that the district agrees to indemnify, hold harmless, and defend attorneys from any and all charges, complaints, claims, liabilities, blah, 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 including attorneys' fees and costs actually incurred, hereinafter made or brought, arising out of attorney services performed by attorneys within the scope of this agreement. I don't understand what that is all about. That sounds like we're really obligating ourselves for something that we may not have responsibility in. So I would like that answer too. And then, like several other people, I think the board should hold off until they do an evaluation before we do sign any contracts. Thank you.
Very good. I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the board. Karen, you have anything? Any comments?
Nope.
Jim?
I respect the comment of numbers of the members of the public that spoke. One concern I had with the prior contract is it said that the district retains its authority to retain special counsel at its sole discretion, but the district is nebulous, and no one is, no individual or group seems to be authorized to retain special counsel, which would be someone on the order of Liebert Cassidy that has special qualifications and interest. In this case, that says upon attorney's recommendation, an authorization from the board and or the administrator would retain special counsel. So it's, I guess it's a little bit tighter, which I think is good. General comments. The I don't object to the increase in the hourly rate with the trade-off. However, I am sensitive to the idea of an annual review, and the attorneys have been employed by the district for well over a year. I think we owe the employees, the contract employees, a review, and it's indeed in the bylaws of the district that we do that. And so while I do tend to support this, I respect that the attorneys would be taking on the costs at their own expense in exchange for the increase. I believe it is incumbent upon the board to do the review that we, I believe, are obligated to do by our own rules. Similar would go, incidentally, for the district administrator. And I've been a proponent, as you know, over the last few meetings, that we do these reviews timely. And so at this point, I'm going to have to respectfully, while I do support the measure in concept, I think it is premature to do this until we've had the review that was mentioned.
Very good. Ms. Stockton, there was a question regarding definition of special counsel and a question on indemnification. Can you provide clarification on
that? Certainly. With regard to special counsel, Mr. Trujillo and I are generalists. We represent municipal entities, cities, and special districts, and our in that way we're sort of like a general practitioner doctor, and so for your garden variety things that happen most often at the district, we are perfectly in the saddle for those. But when things get more specific, then we suggest to the district that it would be a good idea to see a specialist or to bring on a specialist. And the doctor example is the best one that I can give there. Things become more and more specialized and hyper-specialized in our world, and it's in the district's best interest when facing an issue of that type to get the best possible advice. And then you also asked about indemnification. The indemnification cannot and does not pertain to anything that we do as legal counsel giving legal advice. It is not ethical, and we would never ask for indemnification for anything like that. But what we do ask for, and we have received in both contracts, or in the original contract, and we would request it in the to remain in the updated one, is should we be sued just because we're sitting here for no other reason than that we're sitting here, that the district would defend us. And that's the best way that I can explain the meaning of that paragraph.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I'll just say that I agree with modernizing this contract and the recommended increase. I think it's been made by many, the comment has been made by many people about business going up. And yes, I would also agree that doing a performance review would be prudent. So I think that's kind of, I think we're in agreement on that. And at this point, let's see if someone wants to try a motion on this item.
Oh, I'll try. I make a motion. We approve a resolution of the Board of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District authorizing directing the chair to enter into updating an agreement for legal services for South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District with Gil Trujillo and Wendy Stockton, Esquires, and authorize, that's not a good word, but
can we make a contingent upon?
Contingent upon a
performance
review, positive performance review. But let's move it forward at this time.
I would second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Chair Schultz?
Yes. Okay, let's move on to item 6E. This is the
Thank
District
you, Mr.
Administrator
Chair,
and Plant Operations Plant Operations Report. Mr. Huebner.
Hope my voice lasts through it. I'll try and be brief. Yes, this is item 6E. This is our District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Let's just give you a little bit of update on some of our big capital projects and studies regarding the Cherry Avenue Sewer Bridge. The design specs and bid package were complete. It was put out for bid on Tuesday, April 25th, with a pre-bid walkthrough on May 15th scheduled, and bids are due on 22nd. So that's a positive development moving that project forward. Our mechanical bar screen, the equipment has arrived. They have installed, or they're in the process of installing equipment and or making preparations at the headworks to receive the equipment. So again, positive forward progress on that. I've listed some of the dates in terms of what they provided to us will occur in the month of May. And if all goes well, which we do hope so, we expect testing to occur the week of May 22nd. I won't go over much on the redundancy project. Obviously, we had a full item on that, other than to mention regarding our financing, and I just make a slight correction to what's noted here. On April 21st, we submitted a partial loan package application to the State Board. What's missing, only piece missing really right now is left is the resolutions. We needed to get those signed, and so, but other than that, the package, two portions of the package are ready, and the third will be ready soon. Our grant study, again, is close to completion. We anticipate submitting the final report by the end of May. In our district control admin building, we did get an audit report. The architect came out on the 27th of April, walked the building with him and discussed some of the findings. The report did identify a number of deficiencies requiring major and minor corrective actions. We're going to work with him to get some cost estimates. That's the next step, so we can include those. And really, it's going to come down to how are you going to phase those, addressing the most critical issues first in phases. But we need to get some cost estimates first. Our primary digester also is moving forward, making good progress. At least we put it out for bid, and the bids were received. We received one bid. We are working with the bidder to understand and qualify that and look at the cost. At this point, I can't make a recommendation yet whether we're going to move forward or not, but we're having quite a bit of discussions on that particular bid. Moving on to our outreach initiative, as I mentioned earlier with the Coastal Commission item on the redundancy, I did a number of presentations, starting first with the City of Grover Beach, and gave an update not only on the redundancy and asking for a support letter, but giving them an update on what we're doing at the district in terms of our projects and our initiatives. That was followed by my presence at the City of Pismo Beach on April 18th, and later at the Oceano Community Service District Board on April 26th. I was unable to attend the City of Aurora Grande's to hear the item for the support letter due to jury duty that I had that day. Records retention, again, we had that item there. I just do want to mention, I wanted to include that. I forgot to mention in terms of the follow-up on the audio tapes. I have solicited information what it would cost to do the forensics. It would be 2 hours. So 2 hours at $100 an hour, so $200 for our IT consultants to do that forensics. On to our personnel policy manual. We did complete at least the districts through legal review of all the sections. And we've provided that to the SEI union reps on April 28th. That will begin the meet and confer for the PPM. I've mentioned this in the past. That process will have to take its own in terms of when that can come to your board. So to a certain degree, that is out of my control. Other than when we meet with SEIU, we will try and turn around comments or revisions as soon as possible. Financial initiative, what I want to mention there is revolving our audit. Mentioned I completed, or we received the letters that needed to be done, and those were sent to the auditors. There's one remaining issue, that's our fixed assets. That was not completed timely. I'm working with the operators and staff to finalize that. With that, we can hopefully conclude our audit in short order. I've included here, there came a question about the financial review and what was listed there. Essentially, that was a historical artifact regarding that account. We did the forensic and found out that it was closed. Those funds were deposited in our accounts into Treasury or the county funds, and the balances that we reported to you, we believe, were correct. Regional collaboration, our regional groundwater sustainability project, or not ours, but essentially that project. We continue to meet with the city staff, both from PISMO as well as the various member agencies, talking about cost formulas, EIR, joint preliminary engineering costs. I also participate versus teleconference in the stakeholder meeting number 4 and the discussion on the project. There's a number of listed meetings that occurred in the intervening month. Most I was not able to attend due to pressing issues at the district, so I've just listed them for you and for the public in terms of when they occurred. There is an upcoming opportunity with IRWM. They are soliciting for projects to update their project list. So we'll be looking to see if perhaps we can add one or more of our projects to that project list in the near future. Let's see. I think I will conclude with that unless the board has any questions. We do have our plant operations report. As I mentioned, Michael Jones is here to be able to answer any questions on you have on that particular one. We did include the plant data and the average from the last year per the direction I received from the board as a whole. We've also provided an explanation on why the influent BOD, there was one value. Well, the simple explanation is there was only one sample taken, so that's why that single value was reported in 3 different rows. And that concludes my report.
Okay, very good. Let's see, Karen, you have any questions?
No.
Jim?
Why do you recommend a multi-phase approach to the INI study, and what are the multiple phases?
So, this will be a fairly expensive if you were to jump in immediately with looking at the study. We recommend phases in the sense collecting data, installing the flow meters, evaluating that data, and then it's essentially doing upstream source identification. We are also looking to do video logging, which has not been done of our collection system in a while. It's due to be done. So the combination of those things we think should be done stepwise versus chasing up into our collection system looking for leaks or anything of that sort. Could be a fairly costly endeavor, so that's why we're recommending a stepwise and a phased approach.
What's our earliest getting the flow meters, I would think, would at least identify, would perhaps rule out certain sources and may obviate the goose chase that you were discussing as a partial additional phase. So I would hope that we're looking at installing flow meters at the earliest. Is that happening?
That is correct in terms of our approach and what we're doing. I'm going to look to Michael in terms of the believe we may have one and looking to get a second. Can you clarify for me?
We are looking into getting a second flow meter. We have budgeted for that item. And then I don't know if I can speak on, say, future planning. Say for the 17-18 budget year, we are looking at flushing, jetting our sewer lines along with CCTV, basically cameraing the sewer lines, and that can further help us implement where we can place flow meters. The videoing of the sewer lines, basically it's like a live feed, and you can see any issues within the pipelines, and based on those findings, it would better help us place those flow meters and see problem areas.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that. And then on the financial review, March 31st, I voted to accept that report on the basis of the assurance that the numbers were right, and they're not. And that's greatly disturbing to me.
Well, Mr. again, I'm not understanding what you had a historical reference to account that it closed. It's unfortunate that the information was not provided at the podium that could have clarified that for us. We had to spend a couple hours in-house to determine where that money, when that account had been closed, who had closed it, was not done to my knowledge, and where the money had gone. And so that took a couple hours after the fact. The fact remains that money, even if it was in that account, was still there and ultimately was reflected in the overall financial review number. So it was a remnant from of a previous report, and unbeknownst to us, that account had been closed and the money moved. So it was correct based on the information that I had at that moment in time that I presented that report to you.
Very good. So, Gerhard, you were talking about you had talked to IT service and the forensics, said 2 hours at $100 an hour, 200 total. I don't know if this, I guess basically based on that estimate, we should just give authorization, or you started moving
I was
forward
not,
with that?
Based on the board's directive, you asked me to find out the cost.
Okay.
And so I took that literally and providing that, and without that direction, it wasn't, even though it's a small amount, I was going to wait. They are ready to go, and they can do it as soon as tomorrow.
Legal counsel, we are okay with giving him that direction, correct?
Mr. Chair, it's within Mr. Huebner's authority to spend it on his own. The board can indicate in direction to staff of support that he carry through with the authority that he already has.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, I would certainly support you in that.
Okay, very good. Yeah. I think we would support him moving forward with that. Okay? Very good. Let me open this up to the community to see if there's anyone that would like to address the item that is before the board.
Amy Simpson, for clarification purposes on closing the account, was not done to the administrator's knowledge. This was a standing item on every agenda for the month through the weekly meeting. And for internal control purposes, all checks received, which would include the one of the closing of the account, are signed in and authorized by the administrator. Thank you.
And I just want to clarify, that was as a private citizen, correct? Yeah. Okay. Is there anyone else?
Julie Tacker. I don't know why someone would write in their report that on April 21st, the entire SRF loan package application was submitted to the State Water Resources Control Board, yet then tell you here that not the entire package went. So why would you even write that? Because this is the record. This is what people read. So that's misleading. Maybe the minutes should reflect that he said that, just for the future. Mr. Huebner participated telephonically on the 24th of April with the RGSP, Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. That was a Monday. Tuesday was the meeting in Arroyo Grande, and he had jury duty. So if you combined Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, he just took a long weekend. With regard to the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, in light of the Coastal Commission's feeling about your site, I would say that when we're talking about an EIR for that project, that it does not include an analysis of force fitting a recycling component on the site. Your site is unacceptable. It would be inconsistent with the Coastal Act, just like your redundancy project is. The other thing that's really bothersome to me, in this report, he says that you are, the various city staff's continued discussion on cost-sharing formulas for a joint EIR. Cost-sharing formulas for who? Because it better not be you, because you are not a purveyor of recycled water, and you never will be. You will treat the water and you'll turn it over to purveyors who can sell it, and they make money. You will never recover your investment on this, so don't invest in it. This is the purveyor's project. So when there's negotiations and discussions talking about cost-sharing formulas, what direction have you given your administrator to make those kinds of negotiations? What numbers are you going to agree to? Because he's clearly talking about it, and you haven't had that conversation. The last one, the financial subject, the $898. Mr. Huebner says it's correct, but the report was wrong. So it wasn't correct. Just the money, nobody walked away with the money, and no one was suggesting that anyone did. I've closed bank accounts, and I get a statement. It comes in the mail. You open it. It says, account closed, balance zero. How could he not have known that it was closed? And then what's a bigger question is the other question that Mr. Clemens brought up that night, and that was about the discrepancy between the December and March reports, and how could you have, maybe Mr. Hill can expand on that one, because that's the bigger numbers.
That's your time.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. My concern, whoops, I forgot my paper, but anyway, my concern is the 0% low on chlorine. I was really startled by that. How can you have 0%? What does that mean? To me, that means it was offline. And I want to know how, and I think these are questions that Michael could maybe answer. How long was the chlorine offline? what were the implications of that? Do we have untreated outflow going into the ocean? I know that it says that we still met the state requirement, but still, that seems like an astronomical thing to happen. And was it reported to the state? And are there possible fines coming? So that's it.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this to the public.
My name is John Clemens, live in Oceano. I just wanted to make a comment to the board about the financial On the last meeting, it was brought to the board that it was some incorrect information. Mr. Huben argued that it wasn't. Turns out it was. Again, tonight, Mayor Hill brought up some information on your warrant register that's still incorrect, and you guys have received that. Your board.
John, are you commenting on the plant, the report?
On the financial. Yeah, he covered financial. Part of it was financial, if I remember correctly. So, again, you guys received a financial report with bad information on it. I'm just letting you guys know. You guys keep approving financial documents with bad information. So to do with it what you will, but you guys need to maybe have them go back and relook at some of these things to clarify.
Thank you for those comments. We're close to the public, bringing it back to the board. Mr. Huber, you have anything you want to respond to or clarify? And then I think there was Ms. Brown asked some questions regarding the chlorine, and maybe you and Mr. Jones can work to provide further information on that.
Just a comment in general about this report. This I provide is I think most folks would agree it's a pretty detailed report. I try to provide as much accurate information at the time of preparation. But of course, it is a point in time, and as information comes to my attention, perhaps that needs to be updated or provided, that's what we try to do. It's not a thing immortalized at that moment. So, again, we try to do the best. If you look at district administrator reports done a year ago, or the amount of detail we do provide here is trying to be transparent and provide the information as best as possible. If there's errors that come to our attention in any of our documents, what we would appreciate is not coming to the podium, raising the issues to essentially undermine in some manner. Please share that information with us so that we can provide the most accurate information to the board and the public at that time. So just a little bit of clarification. I'd like to have Mr. Jones explain the zero chlorine. We do have an explanation for that. Mr. Jones.
Excuse me. We did have a 0 pounds a day usage of chlorine. It was over the weekend. And just to clarify, this is the total amount of chlorine we use in a 24-hour period. This did throw up a red flag. The Regional Water Board was notified. And we do have SCADA information. It's, source control and data acquisition, and we have trends that show that we still had a residual of chlorine in our effluent, so at no point were we not disinfecting our effluent. And again, the State Water Resource Control Board was notified, and there were no permit exceedances. We did sample for chlorine residual after we had found out about our chlorine usage, and we also tested for fecal coliform, and those were both within permit limits.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. That's very helpful. And, you know, I'm going to echo what Mr. Huber said, and it's really unfortunate it's gotten to this point that people are playing gotcha games as opposed to trying to help us. Nobody's perfect, and it would be really helpful to try. I know we try to do this on other boards I'm on, and even in the city council, is trying to be as courteous at providing information ahead of time so that staff has a chance to correct those things, as opposed to doing this in public. And I think the community is watching. They expect us to conduct business in a positive manner, and we really need to try a little harder to do that and be respectful of all staff. So it's been a long night. We're going to keep moving. At this point, we are moving to a closed session. And I'm going to have legal counsel read closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The Board of Directors of South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District will retire to closed session, conference of legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to paragraphs 2 of Subdivision D and 5 of Subdivision E of Section 54956.9 of the California Government Code, two potential cases.
Very good. See if there's anyone from the community that would like to address closed session. Okay, seeing no one come forward, we are going to recess into closed session. The one thing, I know, Jim, you had talked about making comments, and when we come out of closed session, we will do board member comments. Okay?